You're real?
What?
Nobody asked you to prom, so now you dress as a bat and prowl around your parents' basement?
What's this do?
Huh?
No buttons. I assume it works off concentration.
How'd you do that?
You weren't concentrating.
Can you fly?
In a plane.
Wait, you're not just some guy in a bat costume, are you? Are you freaking kidding me? First one to the building is... Ugh, really hate that.
Hello, and welcome to the New 52 Review Podcast, the official New 52 Review Podcast of Weird Science DC Comics Podcast. I'm here with Eric Shea.
I'm right here, baby.
It's weird. I'm not used to doing intros with you involved. But I have been doing these first two without you, and I'm telling you, I needed you. I hate talking to myself and just yapping on. So
you're not talking to yourself, baby. You're talking to everybody.
Talking to everybody. Nah, I'm sitting here talking to myself, freaking bitching and moaning.
You sitting there on a CB. Anybody out there? I got
breakers. Anybody out there? I'm hauling blood at mile marker 22. But yes, this is our New 52 Review Podcast, and I think that this could be pretty much the first official episode, because we are actually going to talk some New 52, and in fact, specifically, the Justice League Volume 1 Origins trade. And that's how we're going to do it. If you just joined in, what we're going to do is every other week or so, we are going to talk about a different trade. And this one, obviously, the start of the New 52 was the Justice League. When it did come out, it came out on August 31st, 2011. You even forgot about that when I was talking about it to you.
Oh, I did completely. Yeah. Like, in my mind, it came out right with everything else, but I had no idea in September of 2011. Yep. I forgot that it came out the week before everything else. To get the whole thing started, because a lot of people get confused with the way the Justice League works to the rest of the books, because when we started out, we had the Justice League book, which takes place 5 years before the other books that like continue on, like the Batman, Green Lantern. That's all 5 years in the future from where this book sits, where they're all developed heroes and they go off and have their own adventures.
Yep, and that's where people do get confused. But like I had talked about in the first episode, this actually was a good idea. And it was obviously, the plan, because you throw this out there. Because the New 52 was supposed to be these younger, brasher, not as skilled freaking superheroes. But you can't have that. They didn't want to have that, I guess, in the regular books. Like, you don't want to have a Batman book where Batman is struggling for 10 issues. So what they did was started out and show you that in the Justice League, specifically like the first three issues of this arc, is really where you get some ideas. And when we first had read this, me and you really, if you would have told us before we did this, that we would have probably been going gaga about this Justice League start.
Oh, definitely.
I might have been thinking back in rose-colored glasses. Going back now, you do see, and especially now that we've read all, the New 52 and now into Rebirth, you do get the idea and see that it's kind of transparent about what Geoff Johns is trying to do. And we said, while we were getting ready for this and talking about it at work and so, we had said that he's giving a lot of winks and, nudges and things like that, where he's pointing out some stuff. Some of the stuff works very well. Some does not. Some comes off a little odd. And then some
is omitted completely we're at in Rebirth.
Yeah, some is completely omitted. And some is, as we'll get into this, some, especially Wonder Woman, kind of throws everything off of what we're getting now. But this is Justice League Volume 1 Origins. It was written by Geoff Johns, pencils by Jim Lee, inks by Scott Williams, Sandra Hope, Bat. Remember Bat? B-A-T-T.
No, I don't remember that.
Remember when Bat is an inker? I have not seen him around a while. And at one point, I believe he was actually inking the Batman book or one of the Batman books. And I remember when the podcast started.
I think he was doing the Dark Knight one.
Probably. But one of them, we were like, that's very appropriate. And also Mark Irwin. Colors by Alex Sinclair, Gabe Altieb, Tony Avena, and Hi-Fi. And letters by Pat Brousseau. And I'm going to read the introduction of what DC put on their website about what this whole arc is. In a world where inexperienced superheroes operate under a cloud of suspicion from the public, loner vigilante Batman has stumbled upon a dark evil that threatens to destroy the Earth as we know it. Now, faced with a threat far beyond anything he can handle on his own, the Dark Knight must trust an alien, a scarlet speedster, an accidental teenage hero, a space cop, an Amazon princess, and an undersea monarch. Will Superman, the Flash, Cyborg, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman be able to put aside their differences and come together to save the world, or will they destroy each other first? And obviously, they're pushing it as a Batman story first, and it kind of is. It starts off.
You
kind of
got to start out that way in my mind. Batman is the DC guy. You got to freaking start the series out with him and have him be the guy, even though he is inexperienced. He is the guy who will figure things out as we go through.
Yeah, and they did it very well with that. And of all the characters in this volume, I think that they Geoff Johns nails Batman the most, which is odd to me, because and he does a good job with the Flash, but coming out of this, you have to remember that Aquaman's in this. If you only watch the animated movie, Shazam is not in this. It's Aquaman in here. They changed that up. But it's funny to me, Aquaman does not have a lot to do in general throughout this whole thing, which is funny because Geoff Johns went on a couple weeks later to open up his Aquaman series. I think that maybe I'd like to think that he was sick of writing Aquaman to get ready for that, but you'll see what happens.
Well, I'm telling you, you're talking about that. He also started out the Green Lantern series as well.
That's true.
Coming off of The Brightest Day, though, before this, that he had just done all of this. So now we jump to this point where it's like, you know, the timeline is all messed up now. We have a five-year thing. This is where the heroes first get together. We have a very brash, freaking over-the-top Hal Jordan. Yeah. And then when we jump into the Green Lantern series after this, you know, Hal doesn't want to be a
Green
Lantern.
He's not a Green Lantern anymore. It is odd. Like you said, and even going back to what he did right before this, which when this first issue came out was the day that August 31st, 2011 ended the Flashpoint series. It ended it with issue 5, came out the exact day this came out, which is odd.
Jeff was a busy man there.
But this happened again with Rebirth. If you remember, the Rebirth special came out the last issue of the Darkseid War, which is crazy. Also, so you get that also that Geoff Johns had also just done a run, a 12-issue volume of The Flash as well. So he has dealt with these characters. It's just funny some of the changes that he wanted to use just to show you that, like I said, they were these brash young heroes that didn't have a lot of experience. Though if you really put it under a microscope, some of the things don't really come out. But this was originally came out as individual issues between August 31st, 2011 and ended on February 29th, 2012, with the trade collecting all six issues that came out May 2nd, 2012.
And so, it's so weird to think about that for everybody who jumped on the DC Comics with Rebirth, the way we have the twice shipping monthly kind of thing. Imagine, you know, waiting like the Justice League book that we have out now, waiting that 6 months to get the
waiting
stories that we got with
to
that.
6 months to get this story here. Yeah, it seemed it'll be tough if they do go back to all the books being monthly. It really will be tough.
It spoiled the
to
shit out of me.
Adjust that. Yeah, it has. But it starts off in Gotham. Now, again, I'll even say at the end of Flashpoint, Barry woke up. They had the new world. He did go back to Batman with the letter from his father Thomas, and that big scene, the big emotional scene at the end. I can't tell you exactly where that would fall in this. We even were asked on a regular podcast by Akeem, and I do not – I would say that – I don't know. What would you say?
I would say that that took place right before issue one of The Flash for the New 52.
Okay. So what
because
you're saying is
– they have already established characters. They're already the Justice League, and they've known each other for a while now. And that's how where I think that takes place because
so
you know,
what
Barry
you're
comes
telling
back
me
from that
is
and
he
then
leaped.
Continues on.
He leaped, and that was the leap back home. That's what you're telling me. So all of this would be happening. Yes, all of this would be happening in a timeline before he actually came back, went into his body, and then realized what's going on. But yeah, it is a little odd to think about that. And also, really, to me, must have been really odd for people that day when it came out. And I'm sure there were a lot of people went bought Flashpoint issue number 5, and then got this issue number 1, and read Flashpoint first, put it down, and then picked this up. I tried to find some confusion in some reviews from the time or article. I couldn't find any, so
well,
I don't know.
I could totally see that confusing people because even now people don't seem to realize, like I said at the beginning, that you know this took place at the first point in the timeline where all our heroes get together and everything else is 5 years after this.
And also just to mention – Geoff Johns does show as well that, yes, this is when the Justice League does get together. They have been heroes separately throughout the universe up until this point, even as he points out that Green Lantern and Barry have done some things together. They are friends.
They fought Gorilla Grodd. They
fought Gorilla Grodd at a point. And obviously, Batman's Batman, all this stuff. But it starts out in Gotham where Batman's getting attacked by the GCPD. And in the meantime, he is chasing a hooded figure that we find out very quickly is a parademon. And again, as you go into this, it's a weird thing to think of it through the eyes of the time. You know what I mean? That right. Think of what people would have thought, because we see it. We know it's a parademon. I don't know. I'm guessing that most people would have.
Going forward from this, if they read DC Comics previous to this, they should know exactly what this is from when we see it. It's a parademon through and through.
It's a parademon. The thing, though, is a lot of people like him. Rebirth would have jumped on. So it just seems Batman's chasing. He catches up to this parademon as he's being attacked by the GCPD, and he wants to know, you know, what were you doing at the docks? Talk. And so you get this idea. This is a very cold open, that this is something Batman is he's investigating. He's trying to find out. He's caught this parademon. As he says this, the parademon blows up, knocks him back. The issue to me, though, is, and I love Jim Lee's art, but right away, this was a little confusing to me because I don't know if that was like a defensive explosion.
Yeah, did the thing he is, that incinerate? Was just like just an energy, like, you know, dispersal out to get Batman off of him, because then, you know, the parademon gets up and starts kicking the shit out of
and the parademon, when the parademon gets up. But I'm telling you, the progression is not great to me, though I think the art at this point is really good. I mean, it's very impressive.
I told you, because I did not get on the New 52 trolley immediately. I waited like a year and a half until Earth 2 came out, and even when that came out, I think I was like, it was four issues in before I finally decided to go and pick it up. And the first time I saw this, I think it was an extra on a animated movie of, you know, DC stuff, where you get to, like, you know, scroll through on your TV and see like pages for this thing. I'm like, this looks really goddamn good. Really, I got to get on this Justice League trick.
Yeah, and if that was, say, the first six or seven pages, once Hal shows up, because that's what happens. That's where I think it ended. Yeah, as this goes on, Hal shows up. And before he shows up, you get the green light. Batman's wondering what's going on. And then all of a sudden, a construct of a fire engine comes flying through and hits the parademon and knocks him. And then Hal shows up and is awesome. And it's funny because that's one of the big moments. He shows up, he sees Batman, and the first thing he says is, "Batman, you're real?" And Batman's pissed.
That's a great scene.
It is. And he's hovering there, and it looks so great. Batman does not have time for nonsense. Like, at this point, and he does go, you realize later, he knows who Hal is. He doesn't know exactly what, or, you know, a Green Lantern might be, but he has heard of him. He knows stuff about him.
He knows
but
the Air Force is having
problems. Yeah, the Air Force is after him. And Batman says, you know, get that light before they see us. And Green Lantern, Hal is so brash and just, you know, headstrong, and also is obviously not planning things out. He just shows up, and really, to me, this is such a cocksure Hal Jordan that he thinks no matter what happens, no matter anybody that he would come across, he's going to win the day because he's a Green Lantern. He's really going full in with this.
And in his mind, he has the most powerful weapon in the universe.
He has the most powerful weapon.
He is the space cop of this whole sector of the universe. He is the top-notch fucking big man on campus now.
Yeah, because at the point, the GCPD is firing at them, and he pretty much laughs it off. He's like, because they say, like, put up your hands. Put up your hands. Why would I do that? He's like, you don't know about me. But that's where Batman says, listen, I've read about your conflicts with the Air Force out west, so I know you know the drill. Also, he knows he's from Coast City. He says that as well, you know, tells him to go back there, that Gotham is his, you know, beat. And that's where you get, for people who are just jumping in, you do get little bits where Geoff Johns is going to have Hal tell us exactly what a Green Lantern is, and says, and they're the most important things. I'm not the only one. I have this sector. There's tons of us and all that. Yeah. But in the meantime, they're in the middle of a battle.
Even as, you know, we progress with this too, as the story goes along, where he talks about, you know, when they Batman and Green Lantern come across the mother box and he tries to scan it in the ring can. He's like, that's impossible. The ring knows everything the Guardians know, and the Guardians know everything. How can this be?
Now, and he is amazed, because up until this point, you get the idea, it's never failed him. Everything he does. Now, again, going into this and thinking where this Green Lantern, because both of these characters have that unique thing in the New 52 where their continuity continues. But at this point, you don't know exactly what that meant. When they announced the New 52, they basically said, hey, listen, you're a Batman fan, a Green Lantern fan. You know, the big stories that you love, they still remain. Never really spelled it out. I think the only one that they really, really said was the Killing Joke. Right. And I would guess that going into this, you would assume that at least Brightest Day continues because
pick up in the Green Lantern number one, it is right after Brightest Day, where Sinestro is the Green Lantern and Hal Jordan is not.
And I'm telling you, that volume of The Flash, I believe it was volume 3, that ended up being the prelude, the road to Flashpoint, up until 6 issues of that, was actually the epilogue of Brightest Day. So this was right after. I mean, this shit came out right after.
Fucking fast and heavy.
Yeah, so at this point, you would assume, that Hal has dealt with Sinestro, all the stuff that you know.
Right here where I imagine, it will never make sense with the 5-year timeline that we're given. We just know that these things have happened within this timeline, and where we are with Hal right now, he has become a Green Lantern. He has gone and trained on Oa with Sinestro and Kilowog and all that stuff. He has outed Sinestro and defeated him and has come back to Earth to do his own thing for a while now. And within a year kind of time frame for how we can do it. It's never going to work perfectly.
At this point,
I don't think there is a John. There's no Guy. There's not a freaking Kyle. There's none of that going on for where we are with the Justice League.
Yeah, I don't think either. I don't think either. And the thing about that is you can go one of two ways. You can say, whoa, during this whole thing, Hal has some problems. He really has some concentration problems. Yeah, and now you can also say, maybe it's because this is a harder thing that he's ever had to do. He's dealing with Batman, and it kind of throws him off, but he is having concentration problems. But all the things that you mentioned with him, Sinestro, fighting Sinestro and all that, that may be why he shows up thinking he's such a badass, because really, he is. He is a badass here.
It's a weird thing to think of, too, because for how it seems that he lacks the concentration to maintain his constructs and the durability of them and the shields when he fights, Parademons and Doomsday and Superman and all that stuff. It's very odd to me that, we have this because in my mind, he has already dealt with Sinestro, who before that was the greatest Green Lantern, who had none of these problems, it seemed like, but he was able to overcome that. So it's a weird contrast there for what we're seeing here and what you expect to have already happened.
Yes, and it's also a weird thing, but I think Geoff Johns kind of plays with it well because he is part of a core. But you are kind of a singular lantern, especially like you said, we don't think Kyle, John, Guy, they're not involved. So he is kind of the lone ranger out there, but he is part of a team. I mean, a universal team, but this issue, or this volume, Batman really seems to be the one who teaches him how to be a real good teammate and things like that, which is funny because nobody thinks of Batman as being that as well. But I do like it. But as this is going on, you do have some pretty cool interplay between the two. You have Batman there. He actually takes the ring from Hal.
That's funny. Hey, what's this? You weren't concentrating.
Yeah, he wasn't concentrating. And again, that's almost like Batman. He wants to figure out what's going on. He wants to show Hal that he's a badass, but he also wants to, kind of get Hal, he is now, he knows they're up against something fucked up. And he needs Hal to be better, and he does that. Hal uses that crazy ability to zip the ring out of Batman's hand. I was going to ask you, was that actually a thing at that point? Because I remember you talking to me about that.
The thing is, before this happened, you get the ring taken off like that. I don't think you ever had that until Kyle Rayner was the Green Lantern.
That's what I thought.
And he had the Ion. He got the Ion energy from the leftover parallax energy that was on spot on the sun. And when he got rid of that energy and, reignited the the power battery on Oa, he left a little bit of energy to fix his ring for if he ever had it to fall off, it would come right back to him.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was in the late 90s, I think it was, maybe early 2000s when we saw that. But now we're kind of, this is just going to be a thing that we're able to do, it seems Hal Jordan, hey, you took my ring. Bring that back here.
Zippity-doo-dah. It just goes back to him.
I remember back when Kyle Rayner first did that after he got rid of the Ion power, and I'm that is such a cool goddamn thing because it was always a trope in old comics where a Green Lantern would lose their ring and then they'd have to struggle to get it back, just fight off on their own with this brute strength of freaking smarts. Yep.
Yeah. In the meantime, the parademon goes, it transforms. They even say, Hal says, what is it, a transformer? It transforms into what he thinks looks like a dog and runs off. And Batman is worried because the whole Gotham is on fire. I mean, shit has gone wrong. But there's Hal again, and he's just the whole, especially this first issue of it, the first part of this trade. Hal just like, I'll take care of it. It continues on. Like, Hal really does think no matter what happens, I can get it done. And as they're going and they're following this paradigm, and that's when you get the scene where Hal realizes that Batman is just a guy in a bat costume. And he says, you're not just a guy in a bat costume. Are you freaking kidding me? And he's all mad. That's when Batman grabs the ring. And it's so such a good transition of, you know, you're
in
nothing.
Your face.
You're just playing, you know, dress up. What? Like, he's like, what does this do? My ring. He's so upset. And he starts to go back to his regular clothes and whatever. But he gets it back. They're in the sewers at this point, and they see the parademon. The parademon is now attaching what we see is a mother box. Again, if you know what was going on, you realize it's a mother box, and it's there. And it goes, it pings, it's about to blow up. And it does blow up, but it's not the mother box. That's another thing that it makes it seem like the mother box might have blown up.
Because of the ping, it really makes it seem like that is the thing that blows up, but it seems that the parademon, because when the explosion happens, the parademon yells out for Darkseid, and then boom, and like, you know what happened there, like, I think he exploded on purpose, like, for Darkseid was a battle cry trying to kill us with it.
And Hal's there, what's that, some band? Then Batman gets the mother box, and that's when Hal scans it, and he's like, you know, this isn't going to be a problem for me. But it doesn't scan, it doesn't know what it is, which is odd anyway.
And that's a cool thing, because that's where we start out this whole, you know, the new 52 universe is where the Apocalypse and Darkseid is its own universe that exists, and he is a multiversal conqueror, and this is the next planet that he's planning on taking over.
This is where he's showing up here.
So outside of this universe, the Guardians do not know.
They would not know this
little reveal.
Yep. It does show you, it does a very good job of showing you that, yes, this is a multiversal threat, even though if you don't know what it is up until this point, you know that, you know, it's not from this universe. In the meantime, we go off and see Cyborg's origin, and I do like pretty much of all of this in here. You get Cyborg's full origin. If you are a Cyborg fan and you want to see an origin,
Cyborg heavy.
You read this trade and you're going to get not only a Cyborg, it's a pretty solid Cyborg origin really changed much.
It's a solid Cyborg origin to a degree, but because we're dealing with, you know, this whole thing, we have all these characters and it's only a 6-issue arc. I do think it is rushed at times to get us to where we need to be for Cyborg to be the hero that he is, because it comes almost out of nowhere. You know, he is, you know, when he's a football player, we go from that whole progression to his father, and then the mother box fucking booming open and him getting attacked and like hurt, and his father just rushing him to the Red Room right away to fucking do whatever he can to save his son. From that progression to where, you know, Cyborg is the savior of this entire story arc, it's kind of quick.
Here's the thing. If you want to go as Cyborg, the origin of him becoming Vic to Cyborg, I think it's really good.
Right.
You're right, though, because after that, it's very rushed. I mean, basically, he makes his first boom tube to take him to the battle.
After reading this again, I kind of wish that it was an 8-issue arc.
Yeah. Well, I actually, if this was now, and this was the issue, we're back in 2011 when we read this, and even February of 2012 when it ended, I really would have been a guy who would have wanted more of Cyborg. Out of all of this, and it took a long, long time for you to get an actual solo book of Cyborg, and then they were disappointed.
You are still joking about the fact that all Cyborg did is sit in the goddamn fucking watchtower.
Yeah, sit in the watchtower because you didn't get. And eventually, what he ended up doing is sitting in the watchtower with Shazam. That's all it ended up. He really didn't do that much. You get this. And this is the beginnings of the, you know, Cyborg's the football player. Silas, his dad, has not come to see him. He's the greatest. Everybody wants to recruit him, but his dad's not there. And there's the weird part where, because at the end of the scene with Batman and Hal, they realize this is alien tech. They have the mother box, it's alien tech, and they realize the other alien that they know of at this point is Superman. And they even say, he's like, this is the alien tech. Oh, you mean like that guy in Metropolis? You know, and he's like, we're going to go see Superman. And Hal even says, you know him? And he's like, no, I know he's dangerous. He's got this high power level. So they go to head off to Metropolis in a giant green construct plane, which is nonsense. But it's a weird deal because it flies over, and we said, they're going from Gotham to Metropolis. Somehow that takes them over Detroit, and it doesn't make sense.
I read this part. I'm like, what's going on here? Yeah. What is Geoff Johns trying to say that the DC map looks like now? Because in my mind, Metropolis and Gotham are on the East Coast.
That's what we always thought.
Gotham is lower in my mind than Metropolis, and that's about it. You know, they are right on the coast right there of the Atlantic.
Oh, yeah.
And going over Detroit, I'm like, that is a very forced way to get
even in the Batman v Superman movie, it seemed that way as well.
Batman v Superman is just that's kind of hokey for me. Just right across the river from one another, every installment of any kind of movie like that or TV show or stuff like that, they always have their own map for where they seem. Because in Smallville was at the lower part of Kansas, and Metropolis was at the northern part of Kansas. That's about it.
Yeah. And here it seems like they're, maybe Metropolis at this point seems to maybe be West Coast. It's East Coast, West Coast here, baby. But they go and they fly over, and Vic and these guys, the football players, the game's over. He had called his dad. Hey, Dad, everybody's here. We won the game, you didn't come again. And then the plane goes over, and it's Hal riding the freaking green construct jet fighter, which again I think Geoff Johns also plays around with this, that Hal is a very basic construct guy, and he does show that. You know what I mean? You get planes. You have fire engines.
He's a fucking test pilot. He has a jet. He does some fire trucks.
It's so funny though.
The big baseball bat, boxing glove.
You have the standard deal. Now the thing that's funny to me here is they are kind of going incognito, and Hal is showing off. That's all he's doing. He is really showing off here. They could be in just a bubble and fly up high. They're fucking buzzing the tower here in this jet. He thinks he's Maverick. He's going, but at the point they go over Detroit.
We were talking earlier this week how, it's this whole big thing where, when they finally show up in Metropolis and Batman, he comes out of the jet that freaking Hal had the construct of, and he's all like, you flew us over Metropolis in a glowing green jet. Why didn't you say something earlier? The whole thing that we were talking about that we thought would have been really cool is that Hal thinks we got to go to Metropolis to talk to Superman. I can handle this. I'm the Green Lantern. And he goes off on his own. And as he's flying this big green jet, freaking Batman shows up in the Batwing right next to him.
It would have been awesome. But instead, because when they, like you said, they get to Metropolis, they land, and Batman starts throwing shade. You flew us to Metropolis in a glowing green jet. We just saw that it seems like you went across the country. Why wouldn't he have stopped this before? It's almost like he knows they have to get there in this jet. But at the end, he's just going to fucking be a piss off. Now, if you go and you look at it, I do like how Hal kind of deconstructs the construct, and Batman does a tuck and roll. Fucking jumps off it. It's pretty badass. He's got that mother box connected to his belt, but they go and they're going to look for Superman, and they find him pretty quick.
I want to know how he has that connected to his belt. Is there like a keychain?
It's very odd, but they go and they find out where it looks like Superman is, and it looks like there's been a battle. And Batman says, listen, there's evidence of a fight. There's fight. Hal just interrupts him again. He's like,
suck it,
yeah,
Batman.
Like enough. Here's the plan. Green Lantern goes in and restrains Superman for questioning. Batman waits here. And there's points where Hal is really so annoying. Note to Batman, Green Lantern can handle everything. And really, through this whole thing, Hal just gets the shit kicked out of him.
Well, I'm telling
you,
it's like, not only does he say that Green Lantern can handle it all, he freaking makes like a freaking dome around Batman so he can't go in.
Yeah, and he's like, I can handle this. And the next panel, he is getting hit by Superman and getting fucking blasted out, smashed through that case that he had Batman in, and then lands across that, blows up cars. I mean, he's getting fucked up. And that's when Batman goes up, and that's when Superman, you see the first bit of Superman in the New 52, and he says, I don't handle easily, so what can I do for you? And I'm thrown off by this.
He looks at Batman and says, so what can you do?
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, you're right. What can you do? And I was thrown off because, number one, clench fist. And I know Hal went in there looking for trouble, but he's clench fist and eyes are glowing. I mean, this is not – it's weird because you can tell me all you want about, hey, they're younger. This is still Clark Kent. This is still a Clark Kent that grew up on a farm with his parents that taught him well, and is probably one of his biggest powers, like I say with Dick Grayson, is he is a good guy. He's the light of the darkness. Not here. I mean, no. He is now.
He
later,
is the scariness of the darkness.
Yeah,
it seems
and,
like
and it really threw me off, and I wonder how people who were really into Superman, and this was the first thing, because this ends the first issue that we had, and I just wonder what they thought of Superman just being ready to fucking fight at the drop of a dime. He doesn't even ask a question. Now, as it goes on, Batman tries to explain it off by saying, listen, he's in a frenzy, he was just in a fight, whatnot. It's still off, but we go
well,
off
yeah,
then.
It's very off because, you know, we have these characters show up who obviously they are in costume. They look different than normal folks walking about, but they don't look like a parademon that he just would have fought. And
no.
You know, and he should have heard, you know, he at this point, I don't think he might be a journalist yet, but he would have known about the Batman or the Green Lantern in Coast City.
Yeah, I actually
City,
think
and
he might
them,
be one at this point. And yeah, like you said, he should have heard about this, especially because what you are, you would have taken notice to a lot of these things and what's
just,
going on.
You know, that hit that he did to Green Lantern, if he didn't have that shield, he would have killed him.
He would have killed him. He would have killed him. And at a point where you also have Hal pretty much saving Batman's life at points, even though Superman can seem to, you know, bust through the constructs that Hal does. But at points, Superman even says, as we go on, when he wants Batman to talk, and Batman says, let me talk. You better talk before I'm not going to let you. I mean, it is over the top. And it really threw
Superman,
me off.
What happened? You having a bad day, buddy?
Yeah, and all of the characters in this, Superman and Wonder Woman, I think, are the ones that are a little off from where we're going. I get the idea. I get that you want to show this, you know, everybody doesn't want to be in a team and whatnot. But boy, it was over the top. And now we're going to get our next character introduction. And it's quick Barry Allen. They go to Central City's in the crime lab. And you get the whole idea that he wants to, you know, there's always a case where somebody's father or mother has been killed. He's always the one there. And the problem is right now Central City Police Department is pretty much in a lockdown of only trying to find out what's happening with Flash, and everything else is put aside. I think that's a little bit of bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you might want to find out who the Flash is, but they actually are just throwing
cases
away.
Aside just
yes.
because you have a fucking
yeah.
vigilante
now,
you have
again,
pizza running around.
Yes, you do have this thing where Barry always is the guy. Like, if there is the cold case room with the files, I would think that Barry has a key to that, and people in that room know him very intimately because he is Mr. Cold Case. But at this point, the, you know, sings that they're not going to let him work on anything with anything but the Flash, which obviously he's the Flash, so it's throwing him off, and he knows he can't really do anything for that. So he's basically, really, there's people who always dream of having a job where you show up and just sit around and do nothing. That's really what Barry has to be doing, just pretending he's doing things, I guess. I don't know. He can even throw people off by going out and doing stuff. But in the meantime, you do go back to Superman, Batman, and Hal. And this is where Superman he sees and grabs that mother box. And he says, you know, the thing that attacked me earlier had this. What is it? What's going on? Are you with them? Hal comes to, and again, Hal, anybody get the number of that train? I'm like, oh, come on now. But yeah, and then you get also the first inkling that people are not really down with superheroes, as some of them see Hal and they're like, oh my God, it's one of them. Run. And it's funny because again, Hal thinks that they're only talking about Superman. He's like, never mind, boys and girls, I see him. Round two, pal. Like, they're pointing at him. He doesn't realize that, you know, not everybody loves him.
That is like kind of a subtext throughout this, you know, first arc here, because while we're dealing with this over-the-top stuff, even when Flash finally arrives, he's trying to help people out who are afraid of him. Legitimately.
Yeah, they're afraid.
I only want to help you.
Yeah.
Just calm down, please.
Yeah, and yeah, they are. And really, Flash is a good guy when he does, but at this point, that's when Superman has Batman by the neck and says, talk, Batman, before I won't let you. And Batman's like, I'm trying to. And Hal shows up again, and there's the constructs he's throwing, and they're all breaking and whatnot. Then he puts him in chains, which is funny, because then Superman unchains himself. But even then,
Superman
he says, you're funny, Green Lantern. I'm like, boy, this is not a Superman that I'm used to. He's just,
I'm telling you, with the way this Superman is acting, I'm on Team Lex all the way. You don't want this goddamn alien superpowered god fucking running around saying, you know, he can just turn evil. Like, he's on the verge, in my mind, right now, of saying, I'm going to enslave mankind because, you know what? I know it's better for you. I'm
because he's pissed. Yeah, this isn't just a Superman.
Take this fucker down, yeah.
Yeah, he's pissed. But yeah, they're fighting. And that's when he breaks the construct. And Hal's like, oh my God, he broke the construct. What? How the hell did he do that? And then Batman tries to play it off and says he's angry. Hal says, so am I. But he's worked into a frenzy by someone before us. We have to talk to him. But like you're saying, this is a point where, like, Lex is right. Is it just Superman gets angry and then the next thing you know, he's just attacking people without – I mean, he is attacking Hal. He says later that you attacked me first. It's not really true. Hal did go into that building – but Superman seemed to have punched him first. And, oh, God,
you want to talk about, you know, Lex freaking having a grudge against Superman? Yes, we had this whole idea about, you know, this alien comes down and calls himself Superman. He could be this great danger. You know, men should fucking rule over men, not this alien kind of thing or whatever. You know, men should have their own freedom to rule, whatever. And the thing is here, we saw that this was the LexCorp building and this like, you know, thing. Like, this is where the part in my mind where Lex is really pissed. You know how long it took me and how much money it was to build this goddamn thing?
Yeah, he's like, you son of a bitch. Yeah. And then just they are really at this point also, and it does go in when Wonder Woman's introduced in a little bit, where they are destroying Metropolis. It's not even just that building. At this point, Superman has – Hal has made a construct ball around him and Batman, and Superman is throwing it and punching it through buildings. Cars are being destroyed. No wonder everybody hates these people.
People always talk about the Man of Steel and all the destruction caused. Like, you had an alien threat there doing some fucked up thing. This is just Superman here fucking up Metropolis.
Yeah, it's just Superman punching a ball of Hal and Batman in it. And even at this point, Hal calls Barry. He needs help. Batman's yelling at him like, you better concentrate. They're in a hamster ball that's bouncing through Metropolis. He ends up, Barry answers, and Barry wants no parts of Hal. He's like, listen, you know, I told you not to call me here. It's almost like the 3 a.m. girlfriend. He's like, listen, baby, you know, I told you I loved you last night.
We
but
had
it's
a good
now,
time
yeah,
when
it's
we played
noon.
Gorilla together,
the,
but come
the,
on.
Yeah, the fuck it. There's daylight out there, sweetie pie. Call me tonight at 3. But he's like, listen,
I'm
up to – yeah, and he's – I'm getting hounded. People want to, you know, my whole job is trying to figure out who the Flash is. You fucked me up. And he's like, we need help. And it's funny because Barry really seems to me like he's just not going to show up. But then he's like, listen, I'm here with Batman. Batman, he's real. I don't got time for this. Listen, we're fighting. We're in the fight. Who are you fighting? It's not my fault. It's always your fault, Hal. And he's like, I'm fighting. It's me and Batman versus Superman. He's, Superman, are you crazy? And then they start talking about it. He actually throws out that whole thing. Listen, the last time we were together, we ended up fighting Grodd, and we destroyed a National History Museum, and I can't do this. But in all, Barry's a good guy, and he is friend of Hal
already. The line that does it is that when Hal is, you know, still talking to him, the last thing he says, Flash, this guy is going to kill us.
He's
going
to kill us. And Barry shows up, and it's great, because as he says that, Superman destroys the construct hamster ball. Next panel, Flash is there. I mean, boom. He is there. And it's funny because it's almost to me like a Three Stooges-like thing because he shows up. He twirls Batman or Superman around. And, yeah, he starts doing some other things and actually hits Superman and throws him into a wall. And that's where I said – I'm a little thrown off sometimes, and this is one of them, where you never really get a full concept of what Flash's powers are. Yeah, he's fast. Here, it seems like he's using the kinetic energy of the Speed Force to do it, and I like it. But again, it throws it off a little to me that he can punch Superman or hit him like that and cause that, but it's pretty cool. But what
I'm just saying, you know, going at that speed, whatever you hit is going to fucking go. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's
he
not
twirls
a, in my
him
mind,
around.
Super-
Yeah. You know, I guess that's the energy building, and then boom.
And in my mind, when he twirls him around, he also, like, you know, remember in the Superman movie when Superman, like, you know, spins around and drills it down into the sewer to go to Lex?
Yeah.
That's essentially what I think of when Flash twirls him around. He fucking, you know, his feet go into the ground a bit, and then he hits him and he sends him flying.
Yeah. And now, again, he Superman was attacked, but he comes back. Full out of time. I mean, he is trying to what appears to be kill Barry Allen. I mean, he is swinging at him. He's going at it.
When Green Lantern was talking to Flash on the phone, and he says, he is going to kill us. I believe completely Superman is going to kill them.
Yeah, like, I think he
this is.
This
is not my Superman.
No, he is. Well, you know, it's the red. You know, we won't even get into the red energy. but no, at this point, you have Barry, and it is. It's like he even has like the Olay. He's using his cape. It's pretty funny. I mean, and he's going around and he says to him, and again, in this book, it really does seem like anytime somebody on the Justice League wants to start to brag, shit happens because he says to Superman, nobody's ever touched me, Superman. Don't even try. Nobody's touched me, like, ever. And then Superman goes to punch Barry. It's right, you know, Barry dodges, and then Superman uses the fucking kung fu movie flick of his finger
just flicks
and
with his
sends
index
him
finger.
Fucking flying through blocks of the city again, destroying probably 12 vehicles. I mean, he is destroying property all over the place. There is no wonder people hate them.
It is so weird, too, because from where we lead at the end of this issue, like this arc, where everybody loves him because they dealt with this gigantic threat and shit like that, up until this point, I don't know how many people in Metropolis knew about this parademon going around. All they see are these heroes destroying their city and putting their lives in danger. God,
as it goes on, the parademons, when they do fully arrive, you get the idea of why people think that the superheroes are involved, because up until that point when they really do, like at the, like you said, at this point, it seems like the GCPD was aware of some, you know, parademons. There's one or two around,
They saw a guy in a fucking hood or a fucking long jacket.
Jumping 20 feet. So they think it's something. But when the invasion comes, I would think that it's these superheroes. Jesus Christ, they're destroying the city. Where is the Metropolis police?
By the time it's over, I would still think it's these goddamn superheroes. Yeah. And I would not give them a medal.
I'm just saying,
we need to get a goddamn military thing together, hunt them down, and kill them.
Yeah, where's the police? All this. They do end up showing up real late. They went away. And it's funny, too.
I'm in the Metropolis police. I'm calling a sick day, all right?
A sick day. It's funny because they do show up after shit calms down. That's when I show up. Hey, guys, calm down here. But yes, actually, Batman gets between Hal and Superman and says, stop. We're not working with those fire-breathing monsters that attacked you. They attacked us. The Green Lantern Ring said that they were alien. We thought you might know what they were. And Hal's there. Yeah, what Batman says. And they have this, and they want to find out what's going on with these mother boxes. They're trying to figure it out. In the meantime, that's when Barry says, I'm going to go clean up the area. He's telling everybody to clear the area and all that. And that, or actually, that's the police showing up, say to clear the area. They're going to attack, and you see that it's LexCorp military stuff, and that's where you get a little thing between Batman, like a little wink-wink between Superman and Batman, because he says, Superman says, the military, that means Lex Luthor won't be far behind, and Batman's like, oh, I'm not a fan of Lex Luthor either. No. And then they go down into the sewer. In the meantime, they have the mother box, and Batman says, which is very, it's not really, it's a jumping to conclusion thing, but it's true. He says, I'm worried. He says to Green Lantern, because Green Lantern says, well, you seem very serious. Are you worried? What about Superman? He's like, no, I'm worried about these mother boxes. I'm worried there's more than one.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, and we know there is, because you go right into Star Labs, where you have Silas working with one of the mother boxes that they actually recovered from that fight that had us. That Superman was
in Metropolis,
So they have that mother box, and they're going, and that's when Vic shows up to talk to his dad. And again, this always throws me off, and this happens all the time with it. Why would they let his son into this stuff? I mean, this is a pretty, you know, intense lab.
Exactly. Not only this whole like secure lab area, the whole complex being secure.
Yeah.
The idea that they let him into where this alien tech is, you know, it's just over the top
it's
weird.
It's very forced to do this, but it seems like it always is. And there you have Sarah Charles, who if you read the Cyborg book, you know of at this point, just an intern. She even says it later. But yeah, shit's happened. I believe Dr. Ivo is in there with them
Dr. Ivo's
right?
there. Dr. Yep. Morrow. They're all there together before everything goes fucking down and shit gets weird.
Oh, my
weird.
God, yeah. Shit gets really bad because as it's going on, that's when Vic is saying to his dad, Dad, you know what? I'm a really good football player. You won't come and see me. I can get scholarships. And his dad wants no parts of it. And again, he is a dick. He really is. Now, again, he's there. This is what he deals with. He deals with this alien tech in Star Labs. This mother box is probably the greatest thing he has ever witnessed. You know what I mean? Getting this in his hands. This is not even from this universe. And he has it. They're trying to figure it out. And there's Vic crying. So you can go with a little bit of the, you know, Vic, but really, Silas is a dick. He really is. And it all comes down to him saying, you know, hey, aren't you ever going to come to any of my games? Because his dad says, listen, you can throw or catch a football. That seems really great. Son, shit's about to change. These superheroes that are coming out and about right now can do things that you could only dream about. You think that catching a touchdown is going to mean anything when there's with super speed or strength?
He goes about it the wrong way, the way he talks to his son because he's a dick about it, but he is absolutely right.
He's right. He really is right. It's just you wish that he could say, listen, like at any point in this, because even I keep wanting to say Cyborg already, which he's not yet, but Vic's like, I can get a scholarship here, and his dad says, I'm going to pay for your school. Don't worry, and that's a fun school. I wish he would have said, listen, son, you're more than just a football player. You're more than this physical brute or whatever. Listen,
you're more than just a body, going to happen
I
next.
Wish he would have said that. I wish he would have said, you're neglecting the fact that you are a genius, because you would think he is, you know, and listen, this is where you have to go. Look at me. And even if, say, Silas says, I told you before, I was like all-state basketball, or I was an all-state wrestler, or whatever. I put that aside because I'm going to do a greater good with my mind and doing this stuff. Look at this. I have this box here, or whatever. But no, he is a dick, but he's, you know, he's sick of fucking Vic bitching and moaning. I know what I have five kids, Eric. He gets sick of it, but
he's a single father. He's got to fucking do all this stuff. Look, I got to work, baby. Calm down.
Yeah,
look,
really.
Play your games. I might show up. I might not, but you know what? You're going to fucking have a house to fucking live in. You calm down.
His dad is pretty high in Star Labs. I mean, they are not hurting for money, I'm sure. It's funny. He's like, listen, why don't you just go talk to your mother?
One thing I will tell you about this that I'm happy did not continue is these terrible uniforms in Star Labs.
Oh, they're awful.
Dr. Stone. That fucking uniform he's wearing is
it's
the
weird.
Worst.
To me, it looks like it would be something that possibly Booster Gold might wear at one point, or maybe somebody like – it's like a Dallas Cowboys like knockoff. It is bad. I like that it's Star Labs and it has a star. What a hokey fucking bunch of shit. But yeah, he's there and he is told by Silas. Silas basically says, no, I'm not going to your games. And just stop this nonsense. There's no reason. But now we go back to our heroes and they are all hanging out in an abandoned printing press. And you actually mentioned to me that you actually like this touch.
I like it
Superman.
Too, because, you know, it's 2011 for the normal timeline. This is 5 years previous. But still at this point, I love that we have an abandoned printing press. For the Daily Planet.
Yeah, the Daily Planet.
Because print is dead at this point. Yeah, you know, even the Daily Planet knows shit's going down. They got these fucking abandoned. Why wouldn't Superman have this as a secret letter? Because nobody's going to go here. Fucking nobody cares about print.
There. It's funny, too, because I love to have it be the secret of my success that Superman is there and he's printing up his own papers. This is how he gets into the Daily Planet, because he's been printing his own papers down below. But yeah, they're there. This is Superman's little hangout that he has gone to and stays in. And Batman says, and it's a weird deal because you never really get any resolution here, because Batman says, an abandoned press, so where do you hide? You don't wear a mask, so apparently you don't have an identity protect, and there's never anything from that. It never goes from there.
Honestly, I don't think you do, because at this point you're reading this, you know who Superman is. You know the Clark Kent glasses.
It's just
identity.
Weird that Batman throws it out there with ever, you know. Batman doesn't just sit back and not get answers to me, but he doesn't answer. But this is where they're all sitting there and the mother box starts to ping and they don't know what's going on. And this is when the invasion starts. The full out parademon invasion starts, where all these mother boxes around the world, or at least it seems the United States for some reason, all open up. Unfortunately, the one that opens up the worst is in Star Labs, where it blows up and immediately Cyborg is pretty much fried. And yeah, he is fried. Also, at the point where we go to, Dr. Ivo is just snatched up and fucking carried away as well. But yeah, that actually ends the second issue. And up until this point, I was really excited. I'm really into it. And I was really, at this point, really enjoying the Cyborg stuff. This is where the Cyborg stuff starts to get a little wonky. And also, we are about to be introduced to Wonder Woman, that if you are actually reading the Greg Rucka Rebirth Wonder Woman, this is going to throw things a little off. And I'll even go with this a little bit.
Up until this point, I was actually thrown off a bit because I'm telling you, I don't know if I just blocked it out or I just, like, looked at it with rose-colored glasses like you're saying earlier, but just the way, you know, how over-the-top Superman was, it was really throwing me off at this point. I was loving all the cyborg stuff that we're getting because, you know, we are taking this character who was, you know, previously a part of the Teen Titans and where, you know, for the new 52 here, we're kind of like, you know, making him a part of the big league right away. So I liked all that stuff. You know, we're dealing with Cyborg right away. The rest of our heroes, besides for Flash, just seem weird. You know, like
I like Batman's
fine, I guess.
Yeah, Batman's fine. The funny thing that you're saying is, and I'm even seeing it as I'm paging through this and looking back, at the point where this invasion starts, and yes, it might be a little forced or whatever, as set up this way, they are actually standing around talking. So I almost sort of like, okay, that Superman was in a frenzy. He was angry. I'll go with it because I do like seeing them stand around and try to figure out what's going on. Batman, especially, like, kind of, you see he's the leader. Eric, he jumps in. But yeah, unfortunately, Cyborg, he's so fucked up. At a point where they're going, and when Silas is sitting next to him and, you know, crying, I lost my wife. I'm not going to lose my son. I'm telling you, he is like human. He's a ember. He is on fire, it seems. Oh, yeah. I don't know how. I mean, they really want to make you see that he has been hurt. But Jesus Christ, I don't know how he survives. But the next issue in this sequence here opens with Wonder Woman. You find out Wonder Woman, and what you get is everybody is afraid of her for the fact that she worships Greek gods. They don't like her because she's over the top. She's violent.
She's always looking for a fight.
Yeah, always. And they even have, and what happens is Steve Trevor goes in. They're in D.C. Steve Trevor goes in where they're supposed to be watching her. And in the meantime, you see monitors of, you know, you're going to hell, pagan. Pagans have no soul, superpowered, out to go or whatever. God is
the
way. They're really going with that.
I like this touch to it because this is exactly how the public would react to a person who, like, you know, worships the Greek gods and says, like, you know, is a being of myth, essentially.
Yep.
So right there, he's going to throw the fucking Christians in a tizzy.
Oh, yeah. And also the point where there's even a deal where Wonder Woman is also getting thrown in. This is where you're also seeing where these superpowered beings are being thrown together, whether they have done anything or not. Because at one point, you see, like, it seems like all these different newscasters are all with their blurbs and their little things. And one is, there's been dozens of innocent bystanders injured because of superhumans like this Amazon. So they're not even going with she has done it. But the thing that really, really stuck with me, and I told you this the minute I read this, is the one person says she's still worse than any of them. She swings that sword with a smile. And I was like, really? That really sticks with you that she, and she does. She is so over the top, always looking for a fight to the point where you get the whole idea. And she says to Steve, hey, I was on Themyscira. My mom made me do this or that. Now, you know, I'm not on the island anymore. And now I can fight. And that's all she wants to do. She wants to fucking kill things.
It's very odd because of that line there. I think it really does not play the way it should because they're talking about, you know, when she was on Themyscira, she was a child. She was treated like a child. But now that she's out, it's almost like fucking a Rumspringer for the Amish that they're going to, she's going to go wild now.
That's what it seems.
And it's so odd to me because it should not be this over-the-top hardcore
in my
mind.
No, and this is the point where this would be around the time of what we're at the year one story in the
Greg Rucka Wonder Woman.
When she came to America with Steve Trevor, people really were accepting her as a, you know, an icon and a great thing. And, oh, my God, I want to get, like, you know, piece of her. They're fucking everybody.
This right here is not a Wonder Woman who would subjugate herself for Ares to protect people around her. She would have fucking pulled that sword out.
She wouldn't have gone on her knees, Eric. She wouldn't have gone on her knees. And also, you get the other deal with this is also not a – this would be a Wonder Woman actually that would be more of, say, the God Watch and all the, you know, all the villains that end up going. I could see them turning against this Wonder Woman.
Definitely.
Like, this Wonder Woman to me – anybody who would be against her is kind of along the lines of a Lex Luthor. Like, hey, this is a pagan, you know, goddess, princess. I don't trust her, but it really throws you off. But Geoff Johns tries immediately to try to dial it back. back because Wonder Woman sees these parademons on the news and fucking busts out of this thing, and they can't stop her. Steve Trevor comes in. It's like, you were supposed to watch her. Why didn't you stop her? And the guy's like, you're kidding, right? And you see there are people that it looks like she fought through them and then just bashed her way out through the wall. And she's there through Washington yelling, has anybody seen a harpy? And the art's great. The art of Wonder Woman's really great. But also you have to say she is there sword drawn. She is ready to kill. Whether
just walking through a crowd of people.
Just walking through people and saying, where is this harpy? I'm here to protect you. I'm speaking right. Right? And then this is where she sees a girl eating ice cream. This is a big part. They do have it in the animated movie, The Justice League War. It's like the big part for Wonder Woman where she goes. But again, she pretty much threatens the guy because this little girl's eating ice cream. She drops a bit of a scoop there. And she's like, oh, what is this ice cream you talk of? Oh, it's the greatest food in the world, if you ask me. And then she points the sword at the guy and says, may I try some ice cream and another for my friend? And the guy's like, okay, just don't fucking cut my arm off.
Hurt me, goddammit.
It's really, really over the top. And she's there, and then Steve Trevor shows up. And, you know, they have the nativity of it, like, who, have you ever tasted this thing called ice cream, Steve Trevor? And he's like, listen, we gotta get you the fuck out of here. People are gonna fucking riot. They're already against you. I don't want you. And it stops. He actually gets stopped mid-sentence because he's either gonna say, you know, I don't want you to get hurt, or I don't want you hurting other people. But that's when she says, you sound like my mother. And then she says, I grew up on Paradise Island where I was treated like a child my entire life. But this isn't Paradise Island, and I'm not a child anymore. I'm done with people telling me what to do. And that's where you see the ping. You see the parademons come. And they.
And that's where
it's destroying everything.
That Wonder Woman is hardcore and needs to be taken down as well as Superman because I don't trust living in a world with these people.
Yes, because the parademons go and there's hundreds of them coming out of this building. And she says, hey, this is a fight. Excellent. Leave them to me. And again, she has sword drawn smiling and she's ready to kick ass. And from here on out, it is action packed. This is nonstop fighting, between all the heroes and also the Cyborg deal because you go back to see Cyborg. And yeah, that's when Dr. Ivo gets carried off. And even Sarah's like, Professor Ivo, they took Professor Ivo, and it's so funny because Geoff Johns really, really wants you to know that they took Professor Ivo, and she's yelling that in the meantime. Cyborg, Cyborg, he is fucking glowing. He's like radioactive on fire.
At this point, he's almost like a fucking, you know, radioactive toothpaste at this point for how fucked up
he really is. I mean, the eye that ends up getting covered up and being the cybernetic eye that he has, unlike Cave Carson, different cybernetic eye.
Well, that's the thing, it too. It is like something completely I didn't fucked. Realize either because his eye is glowing and it's glowing red.
God,
you know, and when, like, you know, his father starts doing all the stuff to save his life, all he does is put, you know, that faceplate over
the
side.
The face
and it seems that
on.
That glowing eye is the thing
is
that illuminates.
Eye.
It's not actually like a cybernetic force or something
crazy.
Like that.
It's crazy.
It's such
because,
a weird idea. I'm like, what's going on here, you know?
Yeah. Actually, the whole faceplate even threw me off a little. I don't know what I thought. I thought that was some tech that kind of grabbed
exactly.
it with
the
him.
Exactly. The faceplate
yeah.
only comes off like a Phantom of the Opera mask.
Yeah. Because his dad does just put it on there. In the meantime, the rest of the heroes, you know, are fighting the parademons. They are now full out fighting parademons, and it's cool. I mean, you have panels where you have Superman, Hal, Flash, and Batman just kicking complete ass, and it's really, I like it. You then see Superman is definitely the strongest of all of them when he does, I think it's
he's
Barry.
Going crazy again.
Yeah, he's going nuts, and he is attacking freaking 1,000 parademons. He's using a truck as a baseball bat, and that's when he even, it's weird, I don't think of Superman as full trash-talking asshole. But he is here, like, he even, it's almost like a Jaws thing.
Smile,
you
son
of
a
bitch. Yeah. It made me laugh so much. And then he just belts these parademons, and they are all flying and just ripping apart. Then we go back, and yes, you do see the creation of Cyborg, where Silas takes Sarah and what's his name? Morrow. Dr. Morrow. Right? Dr. Morrow's with him, and they're like, let's go. We got to go in this red room. We got to do this. I'm not going to lose my son like I lost my wife. And they go in there, and they use the tech he says he knows. But the whole time, Dr. Morrow, Sarah is good. She's like, I'm just an intern. And he's telling her what to do. And basically, he's like, all hell's breaking loose. Just fucking forget about this shit. We got to do this. Dr. Morrow, the whole time, is like, we can't do this. No, this is not tested.
You don't know what you're doing. This could make a goddamn monster. It could kill him. You don't even know what it could do.
Yeah, you have no idea. Yeah, but Silas kind of gives the whole deal. I have studied it enough. We got to do it. I wish that he just would have said at one point, listen, I don't have any other options. We have to do this. But he's just like, we're going to test it. He has the nanites in there and all this stuff, and he's going to do it. He puts the face mask on Cyborg and then activates it, and then he is activated. It says nanites activated, and that's when Cyborg jumps up, and he has the binary code, he's saying. In the meantime, with the other heroes they're fighting, Wonder Woman shows up. And Wonder Woman shows up kicking complete ass. And
Superman just looks over all fucking awesome. You're strong.
And it said, I think one of the best lines of all of it is when Wonder Woman shows up and there's Hal and Barry and they just stop. I mean, they are in the middle of fighting World War 20. And she is so hot when she shows up that they stop. And Barry goes, wow. And then dibs. You son of a bitch. And you look, they've even turned from a horde of parademons that are behind them. She is so awesome. She is so inspiring. But yeah, Superman says, you're strong. And she says, yeah, I know. she is dangerous. Stay away. But at that point when she shows up, she is slicing through a thousand of them. It looks like she's got the lasso on one that's getting choked behind her. It's really, really awesome. But yeah, you get Cyborg. He's created.
It's a really good scene.
It is. It's really good. And I really do like Hal and Barry together. I'm thinking a ton.
You're like, we're going to go on. I'm like, can't we just sit here and look at this page for a little while?
It's so good.
It's funny. Yeah. It looks great.
It's so awesome. That's when they realize the parademons stop. The parademons go up. And at this point, nobody, including us, we have no idea what the parademons are there for. It looks like, to me, it's a full-out invasion. They are trying to invade. They're trying to kill people. But we don't know this. All of a sudden, they kind of retreat. They leave. And they're wondering what's going on. Barry's like, they're retreating.
The water.
And Hal says, looks like we scared them off. And Batman says, no. They're assembling. And they're looking at what's going on. And that's when Cyborg completely activates. And you see, he sees what's going on. It's not really now... Again, it's not really made fully clear exactly happened with Cyborg.
At this point, it's really odd because we have the ping. I didn't think at this point that he was connected to the mother box, though.
And the thing that I got was that how is it that it seemed like he was attacked? He got the brunt of the mother box explosion. That shouldn't have been what would allow this. And they really didn't push that, hey, put this mother box in him. Use the mother box. Do this.
No, that was later on. I'm telling you, for what he's seeing at this scene, seeing almost like a vision of the future to a degree, or a vision of what has come before,
of what's going on, or what's got, because it does look like it's Darkseid, and it does look like he's just waiting. Yeah, it just looks like he's waiting there, but he does see what's, and it seems like the connection is in his eye. That like you said, that eye that was just like blown out. Now it seems like that's where the pain is coming from.
I'm telling you, later on, I understand when he connects with the mother box, knowing all this stuff. But at this point, this kind of threw me off a bit because you really should not be able to do this right now.
No, and to me, it almost seems like, just guessing now, a shard blew into his eye, and that's what's causing that. And the shard of it is pinging. But it really is. It's really confusing and off of what's going on. I was a little confused at the next scene, only because, and I explained to you, because then you have your heroes there. They're at the coast, and all of a sudden, a big, giant monolith-type thing rises out of the ocean.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think they were really off on, why did they make it green and gold? I get the idea
that's the look of a parademon.
It's weird, though, because this leads into probably the best introduction of a character in this book, because you see a parademon, you see offshore or off panel somebody saying, hey, I was hoping you could tell me, because they're wondering what this monolith is coming out of the ocean. And there's somebody off panel says, I was hoping one of you could tell me there's
and
a parademon there.
There's a parademon there.
Yeah, there's a parademon there. And you're like, what's going on? All of a sudden, the parademon falls and you see that it's Aquaman. And just because I know you're saying that's the Parademon colors, but it's also fully Aquaman's colors. And to me, this was some Atlantean fucking thing coming out that they were going to attack. And only until a little bit later do you realize that it's not, that the Parademons are all flying to there. But boy, Aquaman is fucking kick ass. And this is the very
Aquaman
beginning.
Aquaman has never looked cooler than he has in this panel in my mind.
And
this
I'm telling you, this is the beginning of no more jokes. Like, Geoff Johns, to me, he has his Aquaman series already waiting. It's waiting in the wings. He knows that it's going to kick ass. But this is where he's introducing the world to this new Aquaman that's not a joke, because this Parademon goes down from the Trident, and there's Aquaman. He says, hey, they were in the water too, so who's in charge here? I vote me.
Which
and this
is awesome. I'm telling you, because it's such a weird thing that we planned on doing this week when we had the Titans Annual number one during Rebirth this week as well, where the Aquaman in that story is very reminiscent of what we have here.
And
it hasn't really seemed like that kind of Aquaman since this point. You know, like
And even to the point where in Rebirth especially, Aquaman has been kind of worried and kind of a sad sack about the Justice League. Oh, I wonder if they want me in there anymore. And you never really got a lot of Aquaman, especially in any Justice League book that I'm aware of Aquaman pretty much saying, I'm the fucking leader here. Look at me. I'm a fucking king.
Aquaman was kind of like the leader of the Justice League Detroit
Detroit. I'm talking the main Justice. When he's in the room with Batman and Superman, you rarely see him step forward and claim that he's the one who is going to be in charge. That's what he does here, and he looks fucking badass.
My name is Diana.
Mine's Hannah Grace.
Thank you for speaking with me, Hannah. You're not afraid of me.
Nah, I want to be you when I get big.
I would welcome your sisterhood, Hannah. What are you eating?
Ice cream.
Is it good?
It's the greatest food in the world, if you ask me.
You're gonna die.
Then I die!
What are you trying to prove?
I'm not trying to prove anything, you phenomenal douchebag! Don't act like you know me. You don't.
We're just somewhat alike.
We are nothing alike.
We're fighting alongside an alien, an Amazon, a human lightning bolt, a cyborg, and a speedster. Far as I can tell, Hal, you and I are the only normal people here.
I never told you my name.
Saw it on your flight suit.
You're pretty south of normal, Spooky. You know that, right?
All right, we're halfway through, Eric, and we were talking a little bit, and you were a little thrown off by what we've had up until now with the heroes, especially Superman. I am a little thrown off by Wonder Woman.
Thrown off by Wonder Woman as well, though.
Yeah, Wonder Woman definitely does not. Like, this ends with me thinking, okay, Superman's a decent enough guy. Wonder Woman's just, she is insane.
And I'm telling you, after he gave that look to her when she showed up, now I think he's going to go even more over the top to try to show off.
Yeah, really. And it does seem like everyone there, besides Batman, wants to show off anyway to her. But we start off the second half of the trade with Cyborg. You go back to Detroit, the Star Labs, and this is where Cyborg is really struggling with being Cyborg now. Like, this shit is taking. He is in pain. He doesn't know what's going on. He can't see. And
well, the freaking nanotechnology and shit like that is just, you know, over, like, ripping out of his skin and over, like, lapping the skin itself and making the Cyborg show that we all know.
Yep.
And he's just freaking out because as he walks then, the freaking, you know, the nanite system and everything like that, it starts picking up, you know, data and stuff like that that has not been assimilated yet and just starts going hog wild with everything
now,
in the red room.
This is the thing that is kind of a little off to me because it does look like he has a mother box on his torso. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the art of it, where it is, there's this big glowing thing in the front of him that for me, it really does look like a mother box. But he's going and all this stuff, he can't see, he can't feel his legs, he's wondering. And this is where he realizes this is the start of what we always get of the am I more man or machine, right. And he's pissed. But in the meantime, while his he's downloaded all of the programs, it's about to go, he's going to go fully online now, and they do spell out these tech files and what is involved. And you have some Dr. Magnus, the responsometer.
So you got a
responsometer.
But no, I say the same thing. I have to remind myself to say responsometer whenever I read it. But it's weird too, because I love the fact that, you know, we have all these things that he is, you know, like adapting into his own like system now. But like it is like setting up almost everything that Geoff Johns wants to do, but we never really get to see.
No.
You know,
going we don't,
because you know we had the Will Magnus's responsometer going in, which is a weird thing for him to have anyway, because it gives life to fucking, you know, like inanimate objects to a degree. We had the A maze operating system that's Professor Ivo's, and the B maze operating. So the thing is, when I first saw like a maze, I'm like, okay, it's Professor Ivo. He has a maze. That's kind of cool. I want to know more of that. But then the B maze, I'm like, that is where I'm like, I need to know more.
What the fuck and the weird part about that is it says the B maze operating system classified. Mm-hmm. You don't know anything about it. Then it says White Dwarf Stabilizer, graduate student Ryan Choi. And I'm like, really? Like, right, this is 5 years before all the stuff and time.
6 years in my mind before he even went there. Oh, actually, no, maybe 5 years, because when we do the rebirth, you know, Adam's like number one.
Yeah,
he is in school for like maybe a year or so before he starts working with friggin'
Again, though, at that point he is a graduate student. Now I'm getting the idea that he has been a graduate student for 70 years. he is going, and the weird thing is it doesn't add up, because when you do go into that Adam story, remember his mom and dad showed up to take him to college and all that stuff to be a graduate student. But it makes me laugh, because there is just the throw out of Ryan Choi there, and I'm like, you know, he has been in school forever.
Because, you know, right here, you know, in my mind, you know, we have the Justice League book coming out. It's been out for a few months now. Everybody at DC is working together for this new universe that they're creating. Yeah. So you think there'd be some communication, because while this is going on, we have Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, where Ray Palmer is a part of the Shade.
Yes. Yep.
And, you know, he is the creator of the dwarf star fucking alloy type of shit that allows him to shrink down. Throwing Ryan Choi out there is a weird thing, especially since we will not see him for how many goddamn years.
Yeah, and the other thing about this, though, is you also have to remember, we've talked to a couple of the writers that were around at the beginning of the New 52, and one really, really big writer did say to us that at the beginning of the New 52, they were pretty much told to throw as much in as they could, and to change backgrounds, and to change histories, and really get
go
new...
Go wild with it.
Yeah, go make new origin stories and things like that. And it really does, like you're saying, there is a lot here in this one panel of Cyborg booting up that really seems like it could set up. And this whole arc, this whole trade, I mean, does set up a bunch of really, really big events that come out later in the New 52. But it's the little things like this that are pretty cool. And unfortunately, we didn't come out of this with a Cyborg book, which actually, after I read this trade, it actually makes me wonder why they
really
didn't go with that
like
right
immediately,
away.
Immediately, right? Because he is the star of this book.
Yep, they should have had one immediately. And then you could have dealt with this. And I, you know, if I had my druthers and my hopes or whatever, I know that Geoff Johns can't write every book.
No.
But if he could have done a Cyborg book right off the bat, that you would think in a meeting, they're like, okay, we're going to start with the Justice League. Now we have all these books. Somebody had to have said, you know what? Every member of the Justice League, you're going to put Cyborg on the Justice League. Every member of the Justice League should always have a solo book. And you would have had it. It took forever. It took forever to get Cyborg
to the
book.
Last year of the New 52 to get a Cyborg
book. Crazy.
And it was not great
at all. And it wasn't great. And it just ended up pretty much going back and doing the same kind of shit that we were dealing with here,
man or machine.
Exactly. You didn't get anything new. If this would have been a book that continued on at that point, at its 50th issue, you would think it would have evolved.
We did get something new, but then that doesn't really translate exactly over to what we got in the Rebirth Cyborg series as well.
Yeah,
so it's very odd. There's like, it's very disjointed from what we get with Cyborg here to what we finally get in his own series at the end of the New 52, and even his Rebirth series.
Yeah, and even there's that little thing that actually makes me kind of like, oh, that's cool. Because at the end, the last thing, it recalibrates memory. And I'm like, oh, that could be intriguing too. Of what does that really mean? You know what I'm saying?
If we had all those theories with the Rebirth Cyborg series, like, you know, whether or not he was actually, you know, freaking Silas
man
Stone's
or machine.
Son. Exactly.
Yes.
You know,
or if he was created. AI, if he is an AI that he created, is he going to, you know, at this point, even you would go and you're wondering, you know, if Silas had done something and would he take away the memory of his mother die? You know, crazy. All of a sudden, Cyborg's like, you know what? I hate football. I don't like that game.
You never did, son. You're right.
That day is come and gone. This is a new age, right, Dad? But yeah, Cyborg ends up seeing himself.
Because when he is recalibrated memories, like he's screaming in pain, and Silas says, don't fight the programming, son. I've set the cybernetic operating system to auto command. Sure, you have. You know exactly what you set this goddamn system
to
do.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Exactly.
He's making them.
Yep,
he's making them. Exactly. It's basically the top protocol is don't bitch at your dad. That's it. It's called the don't throw shade protocol here. But yeah, at the meantime, Sarah has said, God damn it, you hurry up because these monsters are getting in. And then they do. They go in, and right as Cyborg seems to be fully operational, and he reacts. And it's him defense or offense mode reconfiguring, and he gets the white cannon, cannon.
It doesn't even seem to be him as much the operating system.
Yeah, it's almost like, to me at this point, very much like the Scabbard in Blue Beetle.
Oh, the Scarab immediately.
Yeah, the Scarab. I mean, the Scabbard. The Scarab. He reacts. He's not reacting. He reacts in panic, and then it kicks in and attacks.
It's funny you say that, too, because when he attacks and uses the white noise cannon, you know, on his back, the way his body reconfigures to do this, it looks kind of like he has a Scarab on his back.
Yeah, it does. It's really odd. And he does. He attacks that. He does get him, and then he's just crying. He is so upset. You get that whole idea. We've had it before with Cyborg as well, that now all of this tech and all of, you know, the internet, all this buzz that's around, electronics, everything is now hitting him hard. And he's like, I hear buzzing in my ears. It won't stop. And he needs his dad at this point. He needs his dad to help him. And he's crying. He's like, what's wrong with me? And his dad does say, you're my son, Victor. You were going to die. I had to do this. And that's where it's like this moment. It's like a Frankenstein moment where he's like, you did this to me. And his dad says, I couldn't let you go. And then he just goes off. You did this to me. And he goes off. And it's like, you were laughing. It's like Silas should yell out, son, I finally spent time with you. Where are you going?
Why
you son
of
a bitch.
Why are you never fucking happy?
Yeah, this is why I never
complaining.
Came. Yeah, I'm there for you now. Buddy, you're still complaining. But you go off to Metropolis, and
kids.
This is where, you have the rest of the Justice League. Now you have all six of them, and they're there. And Geoff Johns does a thing here where Aquaman is still introducing himself to everybody, and he gets a little wink-wink about, you know, oh, there's Aquaman. I thought he was just a joke on Conan O'Brien. Like, way to date yourself, buddy. But he's there, and I'm like, is this the Aquaman is the gag where there's the face and the lips moving? Because that's all I could think of as the Aquaman gag on Conan O'Brien. Yeah, so they're there. Everybody is, you know, they're wondering what's going on. They're upset that freaking Superman has not fucking unclenched his fists since this trade started. There's Wonder Woman, smile on her face. Greetings, Aquaman. What a day for a fight. She's so happy. And I'm waiting, because at the point where Hal in the background does say that Aquaman, I thought that was a sketch on Conan O'Brien, and Barry's there, be polite, Lander. I'm thinking the next is like, that woman is crazy. And then, but she's hot. She's still crazy.
Crazy hot.
Crazy, whack, funky hot. She is. But yeah, then they go through and Aquaman explains how he got involved. The ocean, you know, there's the device. The same way that they all got involved where there was a mother box there. It opened up and they went. But they're trying to figure out who is the leader of the team. And it's funny because Aquaman really does seem to think he is. Hal steps up right away. I'm telling you, at this point, I'm deferring everything to Superman, if not that, Wonder Woman, because they're going to kill everyone. There's Batman in the background. He's in the shadows almost. And Aquaman's like, I don't see a leader, and looking at me. I'm like, nobody's listening to you, Batman. He's freaking in the back. But yeah, then they realize they get done with that. Nothing is really fully, you know, solved. But Aquaman does.
It's really weird because he says, you know, I've got some experience with leadership. I'm the rightful heir to the throne of Atlantis. I'm their king. I'm like, yeah, fucking, you know, Orm's kind of their king.
Yeah, you're talking about here, Aquaman. And really nobody cares. And that's what Hal really doesn't care. He starts making jokes again. Hey, I'm the mayor of Emerald City. And I'm like, nobody's laughing, Hal, but this tower, they realize the parademons are all flying towards this tower. And you're getting the idea also that they're not fully there for a full-out attack. But Aquaman, he's badass, and he starts going with the, okay, this is the plan. We're going to get this Green Lantern guy. He's going to distract everyone as we go. And Hal's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not involved with that, you know. What are you saying? You've Mr. Fish Sticks and Aqua Fresh. He starts going. Barry has to go in between them and say, listen, we got to set the attitude aside of fucking Hal, Green Lantern. It's the end of the world. But yeah, they're just fighting with each other.
I think it's a cool nod, though, because, you know, like, you know, he's talking to Aquaman. He's like, we already have one guy on the team who has no power and shit like that. And he has, you know, uses a construct to have a Green Arrow right there, which is funny because when we get done with this arc and we move into the next one, Green Arrow comes to join the team. They laugh him off because we already have a guy with no powers, and they will not let Green Arrow on the team.
And there's he wants to know also. It's like, you know, what do? You talk to fish, you son of a bitch. You figure, but yeah, Aquaman shows that he's pretty kick-ass because that's when the parademons come out and they yell for Darkseid. They're on the attack again. And I just want to know, is anybody swimming ever in this harbor, Eric? Because if they do, they're dead. Because Aquaman uses his aqua telepathy, and the next thing you know, it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the biggest goddamn great whites just jump up and eat parademons. Why are there that many sharks in this harbor? I know that you could tell me whatever. I don't think that that's fully, you know, should happen, and people should not. I know it's the 4th of July, Eric. You cannot shut down.
You can't close the beach
on the 4th of July, but Jesus Christ, if there was a newscaster there, they would have to get the word out. Don't go in the water. It's crazy. Well,
it's funny, you know. It's like, you know, when we had that freaking when we introduced Wonder Woman and we're in Washington D.C. and there's people looking at all the different screens of all the protesters. If that panel would have been a little bit wider, the one is, you know, the 40th shark attack in Metropolis this year.
Shark attack, Jesus Christ! There's a lot of sharks.
I will tell you though, it's a ridiculous kind of thing for how many sharks are. It is one of the coolest goddamn. It's like, cool. I have this panel saved on my goddamn hard drive.
Oh yeah,
because it's like one of those things. Like, they thought I was a joke. Who's a joke?
Yeah,
now?
Who's a joke now? And they even said, then Barry says, you know, hey, you talk to the fish, and you get Geoff Johns giving you the not exact, you know, hey, I tell them what to eat, and they go from there. As this happens, though, the military comes in, and they're full out attack. You have Steve Trevor has been sent in to pretty much attack the Justice League, or what will become the Justice League, and even says, you know, you got to leave Wonder Woman out of this. But they're like, yeah, you know what? You might have gained a little reprieve for her, but if she gets in the way, I mean, they're really out to
stop everything. It's not even just the Justice League. Down there, parademon, superhero, whatever, everybody's going to get fucking whacked.
Yes, basically, if you're not a little girl eating ice cream, they are going to shoot first and ask later. Because like we said, up until this point, how would they know that the superpowered heroes, especially like a Superman or even a Green Lantern, all of a sudden this guy shows up flying with a ring that's making, you know, light constructs. This is not something that normal people could probably grasp in their head. They're just going to go all out now because it looks like there is an alien invasion and they think that they're part of it. You go with Cyborg then, and Cyborg is going. He saves a little girl or a lady from an attack, and this is where all of a sudden he ends up fighting, and he uses his first boom tube. And it's to me,
it's at that point though, because when he's fighting this parademon, that his, you know, his AI system takes over and assimilates the mother box.
And the thing is, like you said, it doesn't seem like he's trying to do things. It's still, you know, everything in his system doing the thing, but assimilates the mother box, so you have that fully in. Like I said, the art was a little off. I thought that maybe he had it before, but this is where he does get it, and he does boom tube to the Justice League, where they're still trying to figure out what's going on. At this point, it's even Superman is again a little off, because he basically wants to, quote-unquote, like, shut down these U.S. soldiers, because he's like, we're going to have to stop them. They're firing at us, and Flash is like, whoa, they're U.S. soldiers, Superman. And he says, they're men who are shooting at us. And then Flash says, they're only doing their job. And then that Superman flies off at them and says, you seem like someone who wants to do the right thing, but the same can't always be said for everybody else in authority. I'm like,
These guys are in the right. I don't know what you're talking about.
They are.
I'm not all about getting shot down myself.
At this point, separate yourself or do something else. But Superman goes, and Flash, he has to go and help. He's like,
Thank God.
Superman's going to do this. I'm going to go and save these guys. If Superman's going to kill them, I'm going to have to save them. Then you get to me,
and
one
it
of the
continues
best.
Continues this part here where it really makes me feel that Flash is the only decent
hero. Yeah, the only
we
decent guy.
Here,
he is the nicest guy. And even Batman, like Batman does, he's Batman. So he wants people to fear him, whatever. Flash just is a good guy. He even says earlier, way earlier, when he first shows up, when the police show up or the government shows up, when they were all there, and he's like, listen, Batman even says, you're all with us. You know, everybody here is the same, and that's Superman. Nobody's like me. Flash says at that point, listen, I'm not a vigilante. I'm a guy who's trying to do good. I do not break the law. I don't want to do this. And yet he's forced into it, but he's going to save people.
I love the Flash.
Yeah, I do too. And really, from this into the first thing of the Flash, he was so fun.
He really enjoyed it. He's the perfect hero.
He is.
Out of all this group, he is just the greatest goddamn guy.
Yeah, he's the moral compass of them. He's the good guy. You go then, and to me, it's one of the funniest scenes because you have Batman, Hal, and Wonder Woman there, and they're figuring out what they're going to do. And Hal yells out, I'll get them on the choppers, or I'll get them out of the choppers into safety, meaning the soldiers that might die. Not to be a good guy like the Flash, but because I want to impress you, meaning Wonder Woman, I want to, most of what I do is trying to impress people. And Batman's like, what? And then he goes, no, I just, and you see, he's touching the lasso.
Well, even with that, I love the lettering work here because around the dialogue wounds of Hal Jordan, you have a yellow outline around it. So everything he's saying is because he's touching the lasso of truth, making him tell the truth. And I'm like,
and again,
I really dig this.
This is a really cool deal because we saw the lasso earlier. We did. When I said that page that you wanted to sit and stare at, when Wonder Woman shows up, she is slicing some guys and has one of the parademons by the neck with the lasso. Up until this point, you don't know what they're going to play around with. You would think that they're going to go standard, but this shows you that it is the lasso of truth. And she says, it makes you tell the truth. And then Hal's like, are you laughing at me, Batman, at a time like this? But yeah, that's when Cyborg boom tubes in and he's there. They think he's a parademon. Hal actually grabs him with a hand construct, but they say, whoa, back off. This is a kid. Aquaman even said, it's a kid wearing armor. And Wonder Woman says, that's not armor. It's him. And I was like,
that's a weird thing for you to say, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it was very odd that she, but okay, you could go with it because it is true. But Cyborg's there to tell him what's going on. He's like, they go world to world. He's coming right here. And that's where Batman just steps in. Who is he? And boom, a huge boom tube goes off. And that's where we see him for the first time. It's Darkseid. And he comes through and he looks badass. It's a little weird because he shows up and he comes out. He's pissed. And that's when Hal says, I'm guessing that's the bad guy. Batman says, good guess. The next panel is him kind of like sending a big wave of destruction
at them. Yeah, he lifts his arms up and it seems like a giant wave from the ground up is just fucking sending them flying.
For some reason, I don't like that panel. It seems weird. It seems like Darkseid is not part of that scene. I don't know why. It just threw me off for some reason. I'm sure people are like, that's my favorite goddamn panel of it. But he destroys a city block. They're all flying around. The next panel, it may be the best fucking art in the whole book, and it's only Darkseid's face.
Aquaman introduction.
I'm with you, but Jesus Christ, just that Darkseid face and him saying, I am Darkseid, is so fucking kick-ass.
I'm telling you, there should be a variant to this issue where it is just this face with the Justice League title over top of it, because it looks like a cover.
It's so awesome. And you go on, and it seems that he is, with that wave, he's knocked out the whole Justice League. They're all out. Flash comes to first, and he's like, there's Darkseid is just standing there. If he was against a wall, he'd probably be smoking like a badass. He is just looking. He's there, and he also, I don't know why, at this point when Flash is just there, and he's like, guys, Darkseid really looks like an action figure to me. He looks fucking cool, but he's there. Flash is like, whatever. Superman wakes up, and that's when
that is the thing too. Like that whole scene where Flash is like pretty much right in front of Darkseid. There, the perspective to me seems off. Yes, Darkseid is a larger character, but for some reason he does look like an action figure. Like,
that's what I mean. He looks, doesn't he? He looks like an action figure. If not that, almost looks like a mecha of some sort. Like this would open up, and some little three midgets would come out. Hey, boss, what are we doing? But he does look like an action figure there. Superman wakes up, and in the meantime, there you go. Freaking Darkseid shoots his mega beam and it starts going. It splits in two, and this is the big scene that they're running.
This is a great thing here because, you know, you're just like, for anybody jumping on the New 52, you don't know who Darkseid is really.
No.
And just seeing these Omega beams and the idea, you know, like Flash, he quickly runs to grab Superman and freaking run him out of the freaking way because these Omega beams are coming after him and following them. And when they split off and we see that the beams themselves from his eyes split off in different directions to go after each here, I'm like, all right, that's a cool reveal because everybody else is knocked out at this point. I can deal with this whole, you know, running throughout the city trying to get away from these things just because it is really cool.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's cool. I also thought that at one point they were going to play off the whole thing of who's faster, Superman or Flash.
I thought the same thing.
You know what I mean? But it ends up Flash kind of, you know, he cheats a little because he does phase through some parademons that do end up exploding.
He vibrates.
In the meantime, Superman can't vibrate. And he gets hit.
Superman
looks
like he's fucking dead.
Yeah, he does. He looks as bad as almost like Cyborg ended up looking because he gets hit. He looks like he's going to die. He basically must pass out and a parademon grabs him and takes him away. Takes him away towards that, you know, that whole big monolith that came up in the bay. Flash goes back. The rest of the Justice League are waking up. I don't know what Darkseid – again, it's weird to me that Darkseid is just standing there. But it also is badass. Like
it's
he
very
does
badass,
not.
These
he
are
doesn't
just
think. Yeah,
to him. You know,
he does not think
they
they're a
do.
Threat. Yep. Yeah. He doesn't think they're a threat. And if this was in motion, like in the Justice League War, you get the idea that he's just staring at Superman being taken away, and then the rest of the Justice League, when they wake up, they start talking, and he slowly just turns at them, and they're like, "Holy shit!" But there's Hal, and Hal to me, he's been brash and all this. He continues that here. He's pretty badass. Like at this point,
really badass.
Yeah,
I do have a problem with the scene though, because for the he immediately goes after Darkseid, saying, Green Lantern's got this. So he takes the fight one on one to Darkseid, Darkseid beats the hell out of him. And in my mind, for how we've seen Hal Jordan throughout the series so far, where he can't concentrate, his constructs aren't as strong as they should be.
Yes.
Hal should be dead by the end of
the
goddamn
thing.
Fight.
This is the thing that I get. I get the idea like these constructs are all breaking. He's attacking Darkseid. I think that we're beyond the point where it's concentration. I think that you could even go
it's
with
straight
the
power at this
point. It's power. And also it might even be multiversal power that it's having problems with at this point. But yeah, Hal should be dead.
I'm telling you.
He ends up with a
Darkseid's
broken arm.
Darkseid's a character that can take on Superman power wise. You know, Superman, if he cuts loose, he will kick the shit out of Darkseid.
Again, the only thing I can say is he breaks Hal's arm.
That's
he
all
snaps
he does,
it.
Though. He breaks
and
his
then he
arm
walks
like-
away. Is it a continuation of a badass move? Because he does break it, and then he just walks away. He has it. It looks like he could, because his hand is lit, he could fucking go to town, and he just turns and walks away. And I don't know if that was Geoff Johns, like, he doesn't have concern for this. He came at this point. We find out then that they want Superman and they got Superman. So, and it's funny too, even to the point where I look back at this and I was just thinking, trying to put things together. I'd love to think that they were going planet to planet. When Superman grabbed that mother box out of Batman's belt, I almost would love to think that that sent the signal to Apocalypse that there was this thing, that it scanned him, sent it to him, and that's what caused all of this fucking problems from then on out.
That's a really cool thought.
Yeah, they don't really say it, but
I
actually thought that that might have been the case, because why would they, you know, they just go there and go, but they have Superman. Hal continues. Darkseid walks away. Hal still wants to go and attack. He wants to attack. He's there. Batman says, you're going to die. What are you trying to prove? And he said, Hal says, get out of my way. Batman says, you're going to die. Then I die. He's like, this is to him. This is what he has to do. Batman's like, no, you have to stop. What are you trying to prove? And Hal says, I'm not trying to prove anything. And then he says, then who are you trying to live up to? And we know who he is. That's the best part of this. He is trying to live up to his father, but he is not going to tell that to Batman. He doesn't know Batman. This is what he's doing. He is trying to do that. And then he starts throwing shade at Batman. Like, what is your superpower? Psycho analysis? And that's when Batman's like, it's almost like at this point, it is Goodwill Hunting. Like, Hal, it's not your fault. Because he's like, you know what? We're somewhat alike. No, no, we're nothing alike. And he's like, no, no, we're alongside an alien, an Amazon, a human lightning bolt, a cyborg, and an Aquaman. As far as I can tell, you and I are the only normal people here. And then Hal says, you're wearing a Batsuit. Is that normal? Batman says, nope, it's insane. And he's like, so why are you taking it off? I love it too. I'm thrown off, and I think most people were when they read this and talked to us about it ahead of time. He takes the cowl off. He takes the cowl off in the middle of the city.
Thing to do right here in front of anybody you can fucking look.
Yes.
And not only that, he says, I'm Bruce Wayne, and Hal's saying, who's Bruce Wayne?
Bruce Wayne.
This is one of the most, you know, the richest guy in the goddamn country.
Yep. This is fucking Bill Gates.
Celebrity.
Like I said, if he took off the mask and goes, hey, I just want to show you, I'm a normal person. And he takes off the cowl, and then Hal's just looking at it like, am I supposed to know who you are? And he says, I'm Bruce Wayne. The Bruce Wayne, like the name, maybe he doesn't know his look. You know what I mean? Like, I might not know what Steve Wozniak looks like. If I told you Steve Wozniak was in your house, this is a rich fella. Do you know what he looks like?
Yes.
Okay. Some people wouldn't, though. So I can get that and then have him explain it. But it's basically Hal's just like, who the hell's – you ruined my analogy I was going with. You were supposed to lie and say no.
I know. The way I think about it, though, is like, you know, say Rihanna's in my house. I don't know what Rihanna
looks
like.
Yeah, you don't know
who that is. Much to Brandon's chagrin. But
or Ariana Grande. You wouldn't know.
Exactly. But they come in and say the name Ariana Grande or Rihanna. Hey, I know you.
That's why I would like that. I would have liked to him just take it off, not say right away I'm Bruce Wayne, and Hal's like, am I supposed to know who you are? I'm Bruce Wayne. Oh, Bruce Wayne. Okay, you're rich. You're a rich man. But yeah, he is just in the middle of the city.
So far, though, you know, Hal and Batman, even like, you know, when the when Batman and the Green Lanterns crossed over in Rebirth and they had the team-up deal, you know, he was saying to Simon, like, I can't work with Hal.
Yeah, I can't work with Hal.
He does not like Hal. He has never liked Hal. And the fact of the matter that he now at this point takes the mask off to try to have this connection with Hal, who he doesn't like and has fought with this entire time. And just because it's fucking Batman, his identity is sacred to him.
And
it
seems
very odd.
And you can't tell me, don't even start with your, well, this is 5 years old. Oh, this is a young Batman. No, 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 no. This would be more to me where Batman would never want this to happen. And to the point where he is in the middle of the city. Yes, it's destroyed. Most people around would probably be dead. But he's just there. And he is taking there's probably cameras somewhere that are filmed. You know, there's some nut. Jimmy Olsen is taking pictures as we talk from one of these things.
Bruce.
Yeah, and he does this, but it's all to show that Bruce is a good guy, and you know he understands. He's a smart fella. No, he understands what Hal's doing.
You tell me that, and I'm okay. At the end of this whole scene, you put the fucking cowl back on.
Yeah.
You don't do what Batman does.
Oh,
here.
I know.
It goes off without
I'm not even
mask.
Telling you what I said should have been any sort of explanation of why he even does it in the first place. He never should have. He should have said, listen, I don't know what your story is. I dress up like I'm insane. I do this insane thing because my parents were killed and I vowed to avenge. Go through the story. Don't take the cowl off. There's no reason for you ever to take that cowl off and tell. And really, in my opinion, that's when my dead dar goes off. I'm surprised Hal lives, Eric, because I told you anytime they reveal shit, the people die. But he goes off, and this is, to me, the most badass moment of the goddamn whole trade because Batman goes off, still no cowl on, which is, like you said, it doesn't make sense. But he's Hal says, where are you going? And he's like, I'm going to get Superman. And just runs out, stands in the middle of an opening, and puts his fucking arms up and lets the parademons just come and swoop him up and take him.
It's another odd thing because, you know, he does take the, like, you know, he is almost trying to go incognito. I don't see it working this way because he takes the cape and cowl off.
Yeah.
And then it seems that the bat symbol is just Velcroed on because he rips that off.
Yeah, he rips it off.
With like a gray kind of suit.
Yeah.
And then he runs off to be taken. So, like, it's very odd because he is kind of trying to go in.
Yeah, he is.
The fact
why not
where,
just keep the cowl on?
But you can't say I'm Batman now because I don't have the cape cowl symbol.
Yeah,
but
you can't do it, but
weird.
He does do that. I think that was Geoff Johns trying to kind of get himself out of that corner that he wanted. He really wanted to do this. Now, before Batman does do this, he says to Hal, listen, this is bigger than us. This is not, you know, me and you, we're not getting off on the right foot here, but we got to do something here. This is bigger than that. You got to focus. This is not everyone up to bat. And this is, I said, it's a little off, but it does make sense how he said. So far, it's been batter up. So far, it's been up to the plate home runs. We need to stop playing baseball. start playing football. And immediately when I thought of this too, I'm like, Wonder Woman is not going to know what this means. And she does go right with it. But even so, it's like, I get in my mind that Jeff Johns is writing this. I want Batman to have this big sports type analogy thing. And he's going to get everyone fired up. And he's like typing it out. He's like, listen, so far we've been bowling. From now on, no, that's not. Oh, since we started, we've been playing tennis. Nah, that's not manly enough. Since we've been going, we've been figure skating. No. It's like there's not a lot of manly single players. So, again, people might say wrestling. They're going to get mad at me if I say there's no manly, quote unquote, manly single player sports. But it's weird that he chooses, you know, we've been batter up with baseball. No, this it's has to be football. And it'd be funny. They're like, we're going to play a team sport like football and go. And Hal goes off and says, listen, guys, we're going to play football now. And it'd be funny. Barry's like, okay, you guys are on offense. I'm on defense. I'm going to go sit over here. You go take care of things. I'll be there later. But yeah, Hal does take that because he sees them. He sees Batman go.
When Batman uses this analogy, I'm telling you, Batman runs off to go get taken by the parademon so he can go find Superman.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted for all the jokes we had this week about it to ourselves. Like, you know, the final panel of Hal, but baseball is a team sport.
He's just there. He's like, baseball is a team. So you're saying we're only up at, but what when we go in the field, Batman, he's flying away. I also get the idea, and again, this is not fully spelled out, but Hal does watch as Batman gets taken away. It's a weird panel too. He goes, moron's crazier than I am, and then shoots what is something. Is that a parademon that he shoots? It looks like he gets mad and shoots a pile of rubble.
Yeah, it looks like he shoots a fucking pile of rubble.
Yeah. I'm like, why is he wasting the fucking energy in the Green Lantern ring?
And thank by God shooting we don't rubble? Have any talk of that in this whole
Oh, issue. I know. I actually was going to bring that up because this is something that we talk about a lot on the podcast. It even came up in the to date this episode during the Green Lantern Space Ghost annual deal, the Hanna-Barbera DC thing, where they kept talking about the energy of the ring. Don't do that. Let's have fun. Let's not worry about that. You know, that only is, to me, it's like a false bit of tension that they throw in, like you said. Yeah, and like you said, thank God it's not here.
When he's shooting that rubble, though, I just realized, though, he is blasting the way to try to help Barry get out from underneath.
Okay, it's so funny. I just thought he was mad. But yeah, he does get Barry out, and that's when he says he's going to use his crazy thing, and he's so bad with it.
Oh, yeah, he fucks up this whole analogy. Yeah,
he screws it up. Cyborg gets up, and he sees, and he's like, oh, my eye. And he sees, hey, your arm's broken in two places. And hey, better than three, kid. And I'm like, all right, he's doing it here. He's going to get them fired up. All right. And then he's like, Wonder Woman then wants to go fight. She's like, what are we waiting for? He's like, we need to play football instead of up to the bat. And then Wonder Woman's like, I apologize, but I don't know what your games are. I don't understand. And Barry's what the fuck are you talking about? And he's, the beams he blasts, his eyes fall, the target, right? And it's funny. He says that, and then Wonder Woman jumps to the, all right, it's settled. We blind him. I don't know that that's what Hal was going with. The other thing that I like is I get the idea. There's Cyborg. He's a kid. He really is. He's in high school. You kind of forget that. But he's a high school kid. Hal mentions football, and I really do think that gets him like, okay, you know what? I can get a grip on this. This is something I can do. You want to talk football? I'll show you fucking football. They don't even say that. But at that one point, he's like, I'm not even part of you guys. I don't know what's going on. Hal says, listen, you want to stay here? It's fine. Hell no. And he says, hell no. And he's like, all right, then let's go. And then they have the whole panel of, we got this. And it's a weird thing because you have the Justice League there without Batman and Superman, the two, you know, pretty much two of the three big hitters. And I really like that panel. And I also like that it's Hal leading the charge and he has constructs around them to go towards this deal and they're going to attack. And Barry stops him a little to say, like, you know, what's going on with you, buddy? You know, you're not like this. And he's like, you know what? Sometimes it's not just about, you know, you and me. He's like, what the fuck is going on here? Because that doesn't make any sense.
It's not about you. I'd say the hell is frozen.
Yeah, but you know what?
We're already seeing it right here.
Yeah, it's really good. And I like that. And you do get, if anybody has a progression in this whole trade, it is Hal. And he is learning to be on the team, and he's learning to be a better guy. He's not just this brash space cop who thinks he's the greatest thing anymore. He realized, first off, he's been handed, his ass has been handed to him, the whole fucking trade. So with Batman telling him this, and also I think that at this point too, he must think somewhere deep inside, like, Batman must really trust me and really think that I am better than what I'm showing, because he just showed me his identity. Obviously, nobody else knows his identity. At this point, there are few people that know who Batman is. Yeah, Hal Alfred. Is now one of them. Hal's one of them. Yeah, he's in trouble. Now he's going to die. But yeah, then we see Batman go, and we see what Superman was taken to. Basically, he is in Apocalypse, and they are ending up there. They're doing experiments on him, we find out. You had a problem, because then the next issue starts off, and this is where there's a lot of things that I don't know about going forward. These are things that I'll learn about with Earth 2 and, you know, Desaad and Steppenwolf and things like that, because we get Batman, and he is in as the team is still, they're fighting Darkseid.
Right.
As Batman is under, you know, he actually reminds me of Obi-Wan in the Death Star.
Even this whole thing where Batman shows up on Apocalypse, it's very odd, because, you know, like they created after this whole, you know, first, you know, Origins tale where they fought off the invasion of Darkseid and Apocalypse.
Yeah.
They created the Hell Batsuit. The entire Justice League worked together to create this thing, because you can't survive Apocalypse by yourself because of the radiation and all that stuff. And just having Batman, walk through a boom tube to Apocalypse.
And yeah, I was going to say, I didn't really make it clear. Batman goes into that monolith and then sees a boom tube and goes through and ends up on Apocalypse. So, yeah.
And but yeah, you're right. And say, though, there we have, you know, we see Darkseid working on Superman. We have Desaad and Steppenwolf there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this whole thing where they are realizing, you know, we got to fucking skin this guy alive. We're going to create a whole fucking new breed of apocalyptic warriors based off of this thing, which we do get to see later on in Earth 2, because first thing they do is they capture the Earth 2 Superman. Mm-hmm. And we saw, you know, they started doing a bunch of experiments on him. We even had that brutal Superman who was like a clone of Superman, who was the ultimate, you know, like a slave of Darkseid. So it's like, we can see the whole setup of that thing here with what they're doing to Superman, but it's very odd because it's just that they have, like, you know, they have collecting people left and right. These parademons are swooping down, and they get Superman. All attention stopped on everybody else. We're going to stop grinding these people up to fucking make our goddamn bread. We're working on this guy over here.
This guy's pretty powerful.
And it's funny, too, because the whole thing about, you know, getting this Superman, you know, the character to create this whole new breed of apocalyptic, like, warriors is all, you know, it actually leads to the Darkseid War at the end of the New 52, the Justice League, because all of this is about finding Darkseid's daughter.
Yep, that's all this is. Odd
because, you know, up until this point, even, you know, if you forgot about that, seeing in Earth 2, it really does seem that Darkseid is just all about conquering worlds, you know, and they're replenishing Apocalypse and all this shit with the fucking world energy. It really leaves the whole thing of Darkseid's daughter in the, like, you know, in the dark, as we kind of move away from that until the end of the New 52. So it's very weird because if you don't remember, like, I forgot completely that they even mentioned, you know, the daughter of Darkseid in this until I read it again. And I'm like, yeah, we did kind of get away from that until the very end, and nobody really even talked about that.
And it's really weird because even as it does end, it's ending pretty soon here, when it does end, they even make note of, like, yep, they're going to be gone for a while now. And they were gone for years. And like you said, nobody ever sat there and, like, when are they coming back? Oh, who is the star? I'm telling you, we figured out that whole thing with Jason and Wonder Woman's twin. We're still yelling about that, Eric. Every fucking week we bring it up. Like, we weren't doing our site or the podcast at this point, but even I don't think we would have been sitting there like, ooh, when is he going to come back or what? Because they just disappeared then. And then it's weird because, like you said, Earth 2 happened, and then you dealt with a lot of what this was setting up with Superman.
Well, it's weird, too, because – you know, everything, like, where we leave this, we go into Earth 2. Pretty much Earth 2 is the continuation of everything we leave behind with this arc, because Darkseid, you do not see Darkseid until, you know, the freaking weekly series Earth 2 World's End, where we find out that he has been in some kind of, you know, healing chamber from the injuries he sustained from the Justice League here. He has been out of commission, and his lieutenants have pretty much been taking over the whole goddamn shebang this whole time.
Yeah, and as this is going on, like you said, you have Batman finding out, okay, they have Superman, they're kind of flaying him, they're going to end up getting this, creating these super soldiers. In the meantime, Darkseid is still getting attacked, and this is where me and you both had a bit of a problem because we've had 5.5 issues now leading up to this. We've had them fighting Darkseid, but it really is Wonder Woman just out of nowhere yelling, okay, you got it. We're going to hit his eyes and he's done. And basically that's what they do. And it happens very, very
immediately.
Quickly.
Like I'm telling you, I understand that Darkseid up until this point has not come across a threat that has been this kind of thing to him. So in his mind, he's the biggest, baddest motherfucker around and nobody can hurt him. But for the amount, like, you know, for how easily our Justice League come together here and just take care of him immediately, it is amazing.
I mean, basically,
it is too fast. It is too forced. We needed two more issues in my mind to properly tell this story because they show up, they blind them. Hey, open that boom tube. Push him in, close that boom tube. Done.
I mean, and that's where what happens. The whole deal. They want to know what Darkseid's there for. Basically, Wonder Woman, it's set up. They set it up. Geoff Johns set it up with the lasso, that you know what the lasso does. She puts it around Darkseid's fucking neck and says, speak, Darkseid. Why are you here? He says, for her. And then Barry's like, her who? And then you get this whole deal. And then the next bit is freaking Darkseid turning to Wonder Woman and shooting an Omega Beam at her, which she just deflects with her bracers. And it goes and hits the side of his head, which gives her an opening. And she puts her sword right through one of his eyes. And it's funny because you have that. And she's like, ha, and does it. And then she says, one down. And the next panel is Aquaman, one to go, and does the same thing and blinds him. And I'm like, really? And then all out of nowhere, boom, freaking Cyborg activates the boom tube. Shit's pinging all over the place. And that's where you have basically it ending. After a while, you have Cyborg who doesn't know if he can do it. Superman's fighting. You know, you have all this stuff going on. But it also is a very easy way to also explain how Superman and Batman are going to get back from Apocalypse because all the mother boxes ping. It also does a very quick freaking band-aid of, okay, if we get rid of Darkseid, we get rid of the parademons, there's still these mother boxes all around. And conveniently, Cyborg fries all of them with what he does. Even at the last thing, you have Darkseid kind of knows he's heading back in that boom tube, tries to grab Superman. It's like, Kryptonian, you're coming back with me. Hal saves the day. And the whole Justice League jumps in and saves the day there. But
well,
yeah,
Tony, it's even more convenient where, you know, Cyborg starts communicating with these mother boxes and opens all of them up all over the goddamn world, wherever they're at. And like,
and everything goes.
And like, it's weird because, you know, Desaad and Steppenwolf, who are on Apocalypse at this point, experimenting, it opens up and it sucks them in. Like, I really don't know boom tubes to suck.
Yeah.
You know, you walk through them.
Oh, they're almost like black holes at one point. That, yes, like, they really are.
Where are they being sucked to? They're on Apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know because
everything else is being sucked to, Apocalypse except for Steppenwolf and Desaad. Yep. So it's a very odd thing to get, you know, these characters out of the way so Batman doesn't have to fight them to save Superman.
Yeah, yeah, he grabs Superman, they get out, and then, like I said, Cyborg is like, I can't do it, I can't do it, and Batman's just basically there to be a cheerleader. Yes, you can, don't use your tech, use yourself, use you. He says, it's not the computer in there that's going to do this, you are going to do this. What? I wish Cyborg stumbles. What exactly are you saying? This doesn't really make sense. I mean, I'm me now. This is what you get. But he does. He boom tips. And again, the art's incredible when he does it.
Going back to the freaking Superman, Batman, I'm just reading through here because I'm thinking, like, how does Superman and Batman get through? And Batman's like, we have to get through one of these things before they close. Thing. But I'm like, why would it lead back to Earth?
Yeah, it leads right back to Earth and leads right back to where everybody is.
And
it's
like,
very odd.
Where did Desaad and Steppenwolf go? Are they back on Earth?
I'll tell
because
you,
next time we'll see them, they're on Earth too.
Yeah, I really like to where when Batman goes up to Superman, he does say, listen, Superman, can you hear me? And Superman's a mess. And he's like, they pumped images into my brain, the death and torture, Darkseid spread, a multiverse. I think I saw me. And I like that. I really like that. And he's talking about screaming children, whatever. What I really, really like, though, is when Darkseid's there and he's yelling, you will fall. And that's where Batman says, we need you. And when Darkseid looks over and says, I'm Darkseid, and then we need Superman. They say, I love that Superman. This is almost the superhero version of knocking someone out of their fucking shoes, Eric, because he slams into Darkseid, knocks the sword and the trident out of Darkseid's eyes, conveniently, so that the the Justice League members, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, get their weapons back. But it is pretty cool that he knocks them. He hits them so hard.
Now that I'm thinking about this, too, because I'm pretty sure that Earth 2 started with issue zero.
I was
going
to say, do you think that what happened is they got sent to Earth 2 through that boom tube?
I don't know, because I'm trying to think about how that works now. Is that like, because
it was a second wave, so it would have been that zero. It would have been around the 13th week.
It started with issue zero, I believe, where that issue starts out. It was 5 years previous to where we start out in our, like, you know, our Earth 2 series, and the Dark Side invasion had already happened, and they kind of fought them off. You know, Batman died, and Superman was captured. Like, it seemed that everybody was believed to be dead. Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman were the three big wonders, and they were believed to be dead. We find out later in that series that Superman was captured and experimented on. So it kind of leads where he saw himself, where they already, you know, at Earth 2, got expelled back, and they already had Superman and working on it, and this is our second Superman, or maybe how many other Superman they have. So I'm just trying to think of the connection here, because it is kind of odd, you know, trying to deal with the timeline, especially when we're jumping multiverses.
Yeah. Well, we end, and that's it. They get sent back. Everybody's happy. And it's one of those, like, oh, my God, people are all around. They're looking at us. They still hate us. People start cheering. They're cheering, like, you did it. You saved us. They're finally getting that acceptance. And they go, and this leads also to them with the president giving them an award, and everybody's there. Steve Trevor's there. It looks like Stephen Amell. Doesn't he? Do you see that thing?
Yeah.
He's there. Even the point where Cyborg's like, I shouldn't be up here. And Flash is like, you should be. You should be proud. Look at your dad. He's proud of you.
Yeah.
He's
if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have won. So yeah, you belong up here, man.
Yeah, yeah, you do. And it's funny too, because they're all saying, like, hey, this league of heroes here, they saved us. Through the whole time, every one of them, especially Hal's like, we're no team. Like, he's really yelling. Like, they should hear this. And he's like, yeah, that's not the point, you know. All this stuff, but it goes on. I did say to you, there is something that I was thinking, that when people were talking about the end of Flashpoint, going into where Flash would give the letter to Batman, there is one little thing, and I don't know if it jives up completely or whatever, but during Flashpoint, and again, this was a different timeline, whatever you might say, during that point, Obama was the president. They even say him by name. He's there. He's giving the. He made the announcement. Listen, we can't let these superheroes do the job. We're going to go. That's when Hal goes off and ends up getting killed, because he's just a test pilot still at that point. But it is Obama. Here, when they are celebrating this, it is Bush. It's President Bush. So it's
that makes
obviously
sense in the friggin' timeline being up.
And
past
even the, just the whole thing saying yes, it is 5 years earlier or whatever. But it does seem that in that, if you go by that only. That, yeah, when Barry comes back, he kind of does leap home into his body, wakes up, everything's back to normal. This would have already have happened, and that's when he goes to Batman. So that's all I can say. It's still, it doesn't fit in my mind. So I hate time travel, I'm telling you. It's not that I hate time travel. I just hate thinking about it. I just like it to be fun, you know? Bill and Ted, that's all I need. But they're there, and they're talking and everything. In the meantime, you also get this, it's David Graves, right? Who's writing the book. In the meantime, through this whole last issue, this last little section, 20 pages of this trade, you have this David Graves who keeps going in with a little narration, a typing narration. He's writing a book about when the superhero showed up.
Justice League, Gods Among Us,
and things like that. And that plays out more in the next arc. That's a setup for stuff that comes in the next arc. But yeah, at this point, they want to know a team name. They're like, hey, what's the team name? And this, really, for this whole thing, it's the, you know, Battle of Yavin fucking celebration. You know, Death Star has been destroyed. Now we're going to collect our medals. And they want to know a team. Hey, what's the team name? And there's Barry steps up. The Super Seven. And he yells it. And they're like, Super Seven. He's like, well, we'll think of something. And that's where you go to this. David Graves is writing this book.
And it seems that David Graves is the one who named them the Justice League his book.
Yep. And it says Justice League Gods Among Men, David Graves. And he's like, they're the world's greatest superheroes.
And I'm telling you, this ending, though, where we see this, actually got me a little bit upset, because before they go off, they are alerted to another, like, you know, event that only they can handle.
Yeah.
And so they have to leave. Like, wait, before you go, though, what do you call it? Oh, the Super Seven. And then when we see David Graves' book here on the cover, it is the Justice League fighting Starro. I'm like, I want to see that. I thought in my mind we would get to see that in the Justice League run. We never did.
No, we don't. And it is pretty cool. Like, but fun. Yeah, like you said, as this is going on, this big celebration is going on, and they do point out there's a couple things that Geoff Johns, again, winks and nods. You know, you get that concept of Aquaman saying, listen, I got shit to do. I'm a king. I don't have a lot of time to be on this team. Like, hey, you know what? We'll figure it out. And then there's Hal, like, I don't even like these people. What are you doing? And all this. But yes, they're a team. Once, I'm telling you, once you name the team, that's it. It's like naming a dog.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of the dog now that you named it. It's one of those deals. So they're full in. But then you have this weird, epilogue type deal. There's a couple in this, but this one is right afterwards where you see this dark figure. You're in London and a guy comes up and starts talking. There's two guys and the one's like, hey, the Justice League, Green Arrow, Zatanna, Hawkman. There's a new one showing up every day. And he says they're calling them all superheroes. And this is when the guy lights up like a cigar or a cigarette. And he says, well, then I guess they'll call us supervillains. And this is pretty much Dr. Ivo and the Outsider. This sets up the Trinity War and then Forever Evil. And yes, the weird thing about it is later in the JLA, if I'm not mistaken, the whole thing starts off when Green Arrow figures out stuff about the secret society. This is a secret society of villains. He actually figures out shit, and it kickstarts all these things going on. But yeah, this starts off.
It's so weird that we're setting this up with this epilogue now, because all we're given is this insignia on a pin that this character is wearing.
Yeah, it means nothing. At the point when we would have originally read this, it's intriguing. It's, oh, there's going to be villains. Oh my God, the one guy has glowing eyes and things like that. But yeah, it ends up pretty much being the Outsider, which is Earth 3 Alfred, which is nuts. Like we said, if we were there writing a review back in this would have been 2012, like the beginning of 2012. Yeah. And we'd be like, yeah. And then it ends with these two mysterious guys. I think one of them's Earth 3 Alfred, the Outsider. It would have been like, who the hell is going to come up with that? But when it did happen, it was kind of cool that it was really cool. Set up. Yeah. And then you go and there is a full out epilogue. And I don't know. This epilogue is just thrown in because this was the first big arc of the New 52. If you ask me, that's why. Because we get a Pandora and Phantom Stranger epilogue. It kind of also sets up the whole Trinity of Sin thing. And even you're the one who would be more of an expert of these couple pages, but you don't really get too much.
No,
right?
You don't. You get them saying a lot of stuff that doesn't mean anything to anybody. Because, you know, the whole big thing starting off the New 52, you found out that, you know, Pandora was in the background of every first issue.
Yeah. And even right before that, she was the one who brought together this New 52 universe at the end of Flashpoint.
You saw this whole thing. You had this character, Pandora. You don't know a lot about her. You're thinking she's a big goddamn deal. And when she shows up here talking to Phantom Stranger, you know, they have a past together. And not only that, there is a third, and they talk about, you know, the third sinner. Nobody can find him. We'll later find out it's the Question.
It's the Question,
It never went anywhere, though.
Nope.
So everything they are setting up here with the whole trinity of, like,
yeah, they even throw the Spectre in there. They throw the Spectre, they're name dropping, and it seems really cool.
It does.
The problem is, in retrospect,
there's nothing going on here, because the Trinity of Sin really did nothing. The whole Trinity War leading up with Pandora's fucking box being the gateway to Earth 3 never made a lick of sense to me. For what we had, I'm like, I don't know where we're going with this, but this epilogue does seem very cool in hindsight. Not like, if you can remove all the information you know now,
that you know, like, because even the whole thing, the whole thing ends with her saying to Phantom Stranger, Pandora says, you'll have more enemies than I do. I'll be released from my curse, but only after I find and imprison the Strange. You won't help me do that, but the Justice League will, whether they like it or not. I'm like, that's fucking badass. That is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. Are we talking about the Stranger?
Talking to. You know what I mean? Like, this is very intriguing, but we know
never
it never
anything
got
with
it. Anything. It got nothing.
Like,
nothing
is
came
the Strange
from it.
Now, is that Dr. Manhattan?
Yeah, is it? Is that the Strange? Is it then? She says, you know, after my curse, but after I find and imprison the Strange. Yeah, because if you remember at the end of Flashpoint, when she was getting Barry to put together the three universes, she does say, you have to do this. They were separated because they wanted to get us weaker. They are going to be coming. And then, you have this, the Strange. And you wonder what it does.
And then you realize, Jeff Johns making this rebirth. He is incorporating some things. Like, he is taking ideas he had initially, but he's altering them to do something different now. When would you ever call the fucking Watchmen or anything like that the Strange?
The Strange.
So we realize, looking at this now, things were not planned out, even though they say they want to. Things may be, you know, similar, but they're in, you know, in the long run, they've been completely changed to incorporate the Watchmen.
And this is later on in the New 52, in the Rebirth. We even had, when he did the Men of Tomorrow, the arc that he did of Superman, Mr. Oz showed up. And you can't tell me at that point that it was exactly what he ended up being later. Right. It was just a tie-in. But I don't know. It does. This first six issues of the Justice League does set up the Trinity War. It sets up Forever Evil. What am I saying? Futures End. Forever Evil. It does set up Earth 2. It does set up a lot of cool things. The Dark Side War. A lot of really, really cool things. Especially
everything pretty much dealing with the Trinity of Sin here. Yeah, you had other dark titles like Justice League Dark and shit like that. Yeah. But they, like, you had Pandora's title. You had the Phantom Stranger title. And then you had the Trinity of Sin title.
Yeah, which unfortunately, again, you like the Pandora title. And you like...
I love the Phantom Stranger
title. You love the Phantom Stranger title. But then the Trinity of Sin, it was trying to tie some shit up. And it really... It was like the book that tried to help everyone but couldn't help anyone. It really didn't have much going.
It went nowhere.
Yeah, but that is it. What did you think? What did you think of it in general, the Justice League Volume 1 Origins?
In retrospect, it does come off very rushed because, you know, I'm telling you, most arcs are six issues long.
Yeah.
And reading this, though, for, you know, everything that we need to get done, I'm telling you, you're introducing Darkseid here. You're introducing the Justice League, all these heroes coming together. And for what we got, it just seemed way too rushed and way too forced at times to get the job done. So in retrospect, I don't think I enjoyed this as much as I did when I initially read it. It's still fun to go back and see it, though.
Yeah.
Like the epilogue stuff, like the Phantom Stranger, that actually, and like, it makes me a little bit mad because we never really did
get I thought you were going to say it made me smile a little because I got to see my Phantom Stranger again.
I'm telling you, Pandora and Phantom Stranger, they look great in this freaking epilogue. I think the whole thing is cool as hell, but knowing that we never got anything out of it, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that Geoff John was throwing all these hints down the line, you know, and setting all this stuff up. A lot of them, though, never panned out. So that's kind of disappointing as well.
I do want to say that epilogue was not Jim Lee either. It was Carlos Danda that did the art and the end, and it looked great. It really did. Yeah. I went and read this, and it's weird because I think now that we're done, I think I ended up, as we were doing it now, I think I might have read this five times. I just kept reading through it, and I really – again, you read something five times in a two-week span, you're going to stop. You know, it's not as exciting. The first time I read it, I have to admit, I was really excited. I don't know if it's because I have to read and review the Brian Hitch Justice League now that this is head and shoulders above it.
Oh, God, yeah.
Even with the brash new heroes, like Hal is a dick throughout it, but it was just neat to see him.
Superman's
scary, but it was neat to see. It's almost like they actually had more emotions to me. Even Wonder Woman, she's batshit crazy and doesn't jive with what's going on now in the Greg Rucka, but at least she was passionate. Some of the stuff in Rebirth and how it ended, that to me, the end of the New 52 wasn't just because people, the stories were bad or things were changed. You also got a lot of, like, Batman had just died and didn't really want to be Batman anymore. You had Superman. He lost his powers and his identity and was kind of an asshole because he wasn't the top guy on the block. You had Hal, who really was just going around as Renegade, seemed like a sad sack. You know what I mean? Even as we go into the books now, you have a Batman in the run of Rebirth now who appears to want to kill himself. He's working so hard to just die. I like seeing this where, not that they were brash or you see Batman take the cowl off, but it seemed like this is the heroes that had something to fight for. They were younger. They were just getting into the game of being a team, and it did excite me. It excited me the whole time seeing them kind of become a team, though it was rushed. And by the end, really, really ends. Darkseid is such a threat. Yeah, Darkseid is such a threat. You take Batman and Superman out of the equation, and he goes down.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the word. You have the guy who would come up with the best strategy and the heavy hitter
and the powerhouse
are out. And yet they win the day kind of by Hal getting them together. But even that, he's half midway through a sentence, and Wonder Woman just tells, yep, take out his eyes, that's it. That's what it happens to be. And then out of nowhere, Cyborg, you know, starts communicating with the mother boxes and conveniently gets rid of every bit of apocalyptian anything in the entire world. They're gone. But yeah, I really like, as it was going on, especially the last couple times I was reading through it, though, when I really did start seeing things like a Dr. Ivo being taken away. Right. And then this stuff, like you said, with Earth 2, setting up Forever Evil. Yeah, well, I really, really did like that. I really liked to see that. And Aquaman, I really like, because then you Aquaman go to, from this into his regular series, and he's kick-ass now. And
That's one part that's fucking – it actually pisses me off at the end when they are all talking when they're up at the White House and shit like that. And I think it was Hal who said to Aquaman, like, I'd lose that necklace if I were you. And
yeah. I'm
like, he did lose the necklace, but the thing is, he looked badass with this necklace.
Yeah, I liked it. A lot of jewels there. It looked phony. It looked like somebody's like, hey, here's a really expensive necklace. He's like, I'll give you $1,000 for that. It's fucking just glass. But I like that. I like this. Up until the Force part, I really did like seeing the beginnings of the Cyborg origin. Again, like I said, if you...
That is the high point in my mind of the entire
and
series.
And I'll still stand by it. Even though it does get rushed, I still stand by that if you really want to see a well-written origin of Cyborg and realize what's going on for the most part... I'd rather read these six issues than, what we've gotten after that. And I'm really, it's a real shame that this didn't lead to a Cyborg solo book right away, because at this point, it seemed like he was at his highest point, at the end of this. Like, he is now a member of the Justice League. He's gone, but yet he just ended up pretty much being pushed to the side and going from here. Hal ended up leaving the Justice League at the most part. And from,
issue 12, I think.
Yeah. So you didn't really have the team that you get here for very long, but I like it. But I'm telling you, if I had to put a figure on it, if I was reviewing this trade right now, I know I'm going to be higher than you, because I really do like the art. It does seem a little rushed at points, but again, you had Jim Lee.
The beginning of each issue really came off strong. Yeah. By the end, like, it started faltering a bit until that cliffhanger page where it was
again,
really good.
And then that was the big deal. And I did look into it. Jim Lee was on this, and everybody listening should know, Jim Lee is not known to be on time, but they really seem like they wanted to have these issues on time, and the first six were. All these issues that we just talked about in this trade were all on time. I think that you do see a bit where Jim Lee tried to rush a little to make that deadline. After this, he backed off. And even the reviews that I read after the sixth issue, everybody was talking like, oh, Gene Ha's jumping on for a two-issue arc after this. And then Jim Lee will be back. He really never came back.
No.
He didn't. You had, I guess, Ivan Reis might have. Was Ivan, or did Jason Fabok come out right away? I can't remember.
No, Jason Fabok didn't show up until the Dark Side.
Yeah, he was later. For some reason, I know that Ivan Reis was on Aquaman. I'm not even sure who it was. I should have looked it up.
I can't recall.
I just led myself into a dead end. I don't know why I did that. I'm not helping myself here, Eric. But what would you give it? Because I'd give it an 8. I think an 8 out of 10 I would give it.
I'd give the overall feel of the book and stuff like that. I'm telling you, it's just because of how odd the characters feel. I know we're jumping into this whole new thing and we have to expect something new going into this, but coming off, thinking to yourself what DC was previous to this, because of how odd the characters came off and how forced it really seemed to get to the conclusion at the end, I think I'd have to give the whole thing a 7 out of 10.
Okay, well, the aggregate score of this, when this did come out, so these were people who were reviewing DC 2 weeks before it was Flashpoint, all of a sudden, even that week, and what they thought going out. Now, obviously, by the end of this whole trade, all the books had already been out. That first wave of books, you've had them coming out. But at the end, it was a 7.3 out of 10. I'm telling you, it was up and down. You had people that were, not on my watch. There were twos. There were issues that had gotten threes and a lot of tens.
Well, that's just ridiculous.
It was really up and down. I did pull out some of these because, like I said, we like to pride ourselves as award-winning reviewers, Eric, especially on our site. A lot of people listening to this still don't get the idea that we have a website that we had for years now that is award-winning, Eric. I'd like to pat ourselves on the back. Listen, could you hear that?
I could hear that.
Yeah, it hurt. I can't really reach back.
You're
I'm
fragile.
I'm not as nimble as I was, but we were not around at this point. We were not around at this point reviewing books. In fact, it took us until the end of issue 12 into that 0 month for us to actually even get on board to reading. But at this point, Some big sites, Newsarama, said about this whole thing, with the action-heavy approach, these characters feel more like strangers than ever. So they were not that impressed. They weren't that impressed with it and thought that maybe there was a little less character development and too much action. I can see that. I can see that complaint.
And the characters come off odd from what you know going from
IGN
to this.
Said... there were a lot of great little moments scattered throughout and some solid teases as the potential of this series moving forward. I'm excited to see what the future holds for the Super 7. So they enjoyed it. Comic Vine loved it. It was G-Man on Comic Vine. I think he may have given 10s to every issue. He really loved it. And he said, Justice. Oh, yeah. Justice League is like a treat for the fans, and I don't want it to end, he said. And then there was Razor Vine. The site Razor Vine said, an early contender for worst comic of the year.
Wow.
There. And here's one. Jim Werner, he wasn't even on the site. He said, hey, by the way, that's Earth 3 Alfred at the end. It's the outsider. Just wait till he shows up for freaking Forever Evil. It was like I was in a time warp there. I was a prophet to the people. And the last thing I wanted to say, the sales for these books, as Just League especially, were through the roof. It was the number one comic every month that came out. It started off with the number one issue selling 231,000 for that number one. And then even because, like we said, that came out at the end of August. Even the next month, September, when all the other books came out, I think it still ended up selling like 50,000 issues again in September.
Yeah, that number one issue carrying over was the number number 20 book of that month.
Yeah, it was crazy. But even to the point where the number one issue of when this came out, number six of this, the last issue, was still number one. Now, Batman was starting to create the
hype of the freaking Court of the Owls.
It was the Court of the Owls and Scott Snyder and things. And eventually that did flip-flop. The gap was narrowing at the end of this, but it was still selling 145,000 after issue six. And that's awesome. From looking at the sales with Rebirth and stuff like that, that's actually very impressive. It really is. So it was a hit. It got everything going with that first issue and then carried on. And, you know, like I said, I liked it a little more than you, but I actually liked the action part of it. I think that Geoff Johns just was setting up some things and thought, you know what, besides Cyborg, all these characters, they have their own books. We're going to deal with them 5 years
in the
future. And
that was a smart decision to deal with the freaking Cyborg in that case because he knew that going forward, Cyborg would be the only one that has
a book. Yeah, Cyborg does not have a book. So
I do like that aspect.
He is the one who got the most character, you know, development in that, even though I thought Hal really did get some. He went from a total dick. He went from a total dick to a kind of a dick, but a dick that was looking out for people, Eric. But that's
it. And then a dick at the end of the issue as well. You know, thing. You know, he reverted back at the end.
Yeah, yeah. But that's
it. Over, nice guy over.
Yeah. So that is the end of our episode of the Just League Origins. The next episode, we will be talking about Animal Man Volume 1, which I believe is titled The Hunt. Right. I believe it is. But it is Animal Man number one. Will be kind of interesting because you didn't read that, right?
No, I did not. I'm telling you, I used to look at the comic book shop and see all those crazy covers. I'm like, yeah, maybe that's not for me.
Yeah, so if you want to follow along.
There, and I might have read some later along issues, but this I'm not familiar with.
And it's Jeff Lemire. It's weird because I did end up reading that. Not sure how closely I paid attention because I ended up reviewing Animal Man later. I'm talking issue 23.
23, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So I ended up going back and reading. I think I may have skimmed a little. So this is why I liked having the idea of this podcast, that not just people listening would go out and get this trade or check into Animal Man. It's also us as well. So this will be something that we can – and really Animal Man – is one of the series that people do look back. If you look up lists, best series of the New 52, a lot of people do throw Animal Man. I don't know if some of them are trying to fake the funk and be pretentious, Eric, but it was good. Even when I started going on it, it was very good. Little Buddy Baker and his family. But we'll be doing that probably in 2 weeks. Like I said, this is very dependent on what goes on the week of that second week, because we do have a 12-hour podcast sometimes. Hopefully the schedule will remain.
And a pop culture podcast.
And a pop culture podcast. And a thing where we do a spotlight that you might think the spotlight doesn't take a lot of time. It still takes an extra 45 to an hour of our time. So, and we're not bitching.
No.
I'm just saying, usually we are very good at keeping a schedule, but we'll see. I do like doing this, and I enjoyed talking to you about this. But yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening, and see you in 14.